This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee. Great to have you back again this week. Hope you're having a fantastic week. Look forward to talking to you about a lot of stuff today. We have some great games on tap to talk about. We have some interesting stories in the news to talk about. Your questions, which are still coming in, quite excellent. Good work on that. And if we're a little lucky and, you know, the United States Customs Department doesn't hold him up, Mr. Jeff Cannata will be arriving here in studio, fresh off of his multi-hour plane flight from Australia. So
deliciously jet-lagged, I'm sure.
I know. But yeah, we do have, there you go, you know him, Mr. Jeff Mattis, there at the end of the table.
Hey, how's it going? Great to be here.
And Nicole is here with us today.
Hey, how's it going? Great to be here.
Wow.
By the way, if you have not seen it yet, it's been linked around, and I will make sure and link it again. The first video part of Nick Bristow doing the awesome YouTube interpretation of Nicole's story time for Zelda Ocarina of Time is now up on YouTube, and it's
sensational. It is, I mean, I don't want to like it make it seem
par,
better than it is, but it's fantastic.
Par excellence.
Yes. Yeah. Spoilers also, but you know.
But, you know, it came out in 97 though, so I feel like we passed the threshold there of like it being not okay. So
yeah. Hey, look, he goes, wait, now he's got white pants.
Yes.
There's some really good stuff. It is quite entertaining. When are we going to do another story time?
Yeah, whenever you guys want. Maybe next time.
Yeah,
we'll let Nick catch up with part two, and then we'll be even.
I think the audience sort of, you know, went back and forth. There was some, you know, like people having fun with it at first, and they're like, oh, we don't want to have it every time. I think, you know, it's just got to leave them wanting more.
Do you have something set in your sights, potentially, for this next...
I haven't thought about it, man. This is you're cutting me off guard here.
All right, well, let me throw out, you know, BioShock Infinite and Last of Us as possibilities. Those have pretty interesting stories.
It might be a little soon to do those because of the spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably right.
So maybe next time.
Okay.
You could take requests.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Or you could just do something you played that was really fun.
Yeah, I could do like an interpretive version of Pokemon Snap, because that's a very complicated story.
that could be quite entertaining. All right, so we've got lots of games we've been playing. I've been playing Dragon's Crown, and I'm still addicted to Animal Crossing. And Nicole's been in Borderlands 2 as a Mechromancer. She's got that BioShock Infinite DLC. Jeff's been playing Shadowrun Returns. But we've got some stories that I think we should dig into first. I just don't know which one to start with. It's, you know, do I want to start with the good news or the bad news, or everybody has some version of these newses. But I think one of the big stories this week that definitely caught everyone's attention was the report on Nintendo's financials, where it came out that over the last quarter, they only shifted 160,000 Wii U's worldwide.
Didn't the Wii sell better?
Yeah.
Yes, it
That's
did.
That's nuts.
They managed to move 210,000 Wii's, but only 160,000 Wii U's. And it's much worse in software, where they only did 1.03 million units of software for Wii U versus 3.67 for Wii. So
I read something too that Toys R Us didn't even, when they were marketing both consoles, they didn't even know the difference between the two, or the marketing materials that they released were.
Well, you just stole the thunder out of the argument. I think that this is just the final, you know, proof that people do not understand that the Wii U is a new console for some reason, outside of gamers. I mean, obviously, right, all you guys and gals out there who are listening, you know what the Wii U is, and you know about its gamepad, you get all that kind of stuff.
But I also know that it's basically the Wii, but HD. So even as a gamer who knows things, I still know it's basically the same thing.
Well, I mean, isn't that to a degree saying that the PlayStation 4 is basically the PlayStation 3, but with better graphics?
True, but the,
but
you know,
no,
you
no, it's different somehow.
It's bumped up to, you know, I mean, the Wii U is basically, you know, on par with last gen, maybe a little bit faster.
Seemingly, some optimizations in there, but right. Like, it's
but that's
not
part of it, you know.
It's not the what we're thinking of now as next gen.
Right.
Right. It's not the PS3. I mean, sorry, it's not PS4, Xbox One grade. It's more like a little bit beyond 360 and PS3.
Yeah, I mean,
but nevertheless, for home use, I mean, for what people are into, and for as many people as bought Wii's, it seems that the crux of the matter, as far as messaging, is that there are a lot of people who just aren't getting it.
Well, maybe that's the Achilles heel of selling your hardest to the mass market.
Could be.
You know, like if that's your target audience for your all your stuff, it's going to be harder to, I mean, if you're not capturing those enthusiasts as well, you're going to have nobody trumpeting all the great new stuff that's coming out. And
but then it's like, what great new stuff?
Yeah, so that's exactly. So lest those of you who are screaming at the radio already, yeah. It's the software. Right, yeah. We get that. I mean, yeah. The other big piece is that they just haven't had the pillar software to sell the thing.
Pikmin 3, right? That's coming out in a few weeks.
Pikmin 3, I'm super excited for. Yeah. If you read Andrew's review, he liked it, although he was a little cool on it simply because I think he had the feeling, I won't put words in his mouth, if you could read his review, that it retread on a lot of the ground it had been on, and that it felt to him like a game that had not been designed initially for the Wii U. In other words, there were a lot of things they could have done right. With the gamepad that go pretty much unrealized.
Well, I mean, it's probably a Wii game that just got held over.
And I was going to say the same thing.
There's indications it could be. Yeah.
Well, but, I mean, Pikmin, you know, the first one, I don't know how long that was in development, but this has been talked, Pikmin 3 has been talked about for...
I also feel like Pikmin is one of those games where we in the press and, you know, we as gamers get excited about it, enthusiastic about it. But then when it actually comes out, it never really seems to get the accolades and
it's a tough sell too, because like we know what Pikmin is. But if you had to describe it to like someone who's like new to games, like how would you even describe that in like have to play kind of way?
How would you describe it?
Those little guys and then their little hats.
Yes.
I wouldn't describe it very well is my point.
No, I mean,
I think the challenge is not comparing it to other games. This is a game because we get lazy and want to compare to other games. And there are not good, easy to compare to games. It's a game where you have little minions who work for you. Mm-hmm. And the little minions have different skills and capabilities. Like some of them can survive water. And some of them are stronger and can move heavier objects. And you combine them.
Do you like
them.
Micromanagement? Because this is the game for you.
The closest comparison that I could think of is Little King's Story, which again, which nobody knows.
Oh,
I mean, like you know.
I love that game so
much. It's really
much.
Good. It's really good. But it's again, that game, as good as it was, didn't get the mass market sort of love that you know, those kind of games.
Well, and I didn't expect that to, because I mean, that was obviously a very
it's a harder sell to somebody who's playing Wii
very
tennis.
Japanese oriented game that came that we were lucky to get imported to the United States and North and Europe and had a lot of fun with, but it didn't have it wasn't a Nintendo title. I mean, Pikmin 3 is a Nintendo title.
Yeah,
you do expect it to sort of get out there in front of people and be a little bit bigger deal than just Pikmin 3. But it's not a system seller, right?
Right.
I mean, that's what we're talking about. It's not a system
seller. The people that are going to buy Pikmin 3 on day one have been waiting for Pikmin 3 for a long time.
It's pre-ordered. Like, it's not a new sale. Like, they're not surprised by it.
I mean, you might have some new... So you'll probably have some new, you know, customers if they get good buzz. I'm sure it'll be solid, but...
And just like we were talking about at E3, and maybe I was a little too hopeful for Nintendo, they have a really tough road ahead. And as some people in the forums have pointed out, you know... They're now looking down the barrel of Xbox One and PS4 being out in the market and still floundering around not knowing what they're doing.
They need to make some good decisions really fast because I feel like it's just bad. I mean, the news, their economic news from this week, at least they're selling something.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not the console they wish they were selling, but at least
they're happy selling
money.
It. Yeah. They're certainly happy
they're still
selling
making
3DSs.
The Wii.
And they're selling shit tons of Animal Crossing.
And I'm waiting for a Pokemon 3DS bundle, and as soon as they release it in America, I'm going to buy it.
How about the all black everything 3DS that's coming out next week?
That's a little too simplistic for me.
It's cool. I'm sure.
I don't have an XL 3DS yet, and I play one game and one game only. But I am now like into the 20s and 30s of hours on Animal Crossing, and I can see it just continuing to go that route. So I mean, I could buy a 3DS XL just for that.
I feel like if you're going to go 3DS at this point, you have to go XL. It's
absolutely.
Nice
I still have my plain one, and then, you know, I can transfer everything over and I don't know, do something with the regular. Anyway, I think that, you know, last week I was a little, Andrea brought up the whole thing about price drops, and I was like, who's your source on the analysts?
That's a good source.
Now coming back to it especially if I think that this news is so dire that it really does change the complexion, and I suppose maybe the analysts had some, you know, precog insight on this.
You know, it's kind of weird to say, and I don't want to draw any Nintendo or ire from Nintendo fans, because I love early Nintendo stuff and was a big fan of the system, but I'm almost of the opinion that going the way of Sega would be a, you know...
People have asked that. Now, do you really think...
No, I don't think that's going to happen
anytime
soon.
Dude, they still make so much money on hard... They make money on their hardware.
Right, but once
they don't have any incentive to get out of that market.
Once the Wii stops, once that trickles off and nobody's buying Wii anymore.
Right. It's just the Wii U.
I see their handheld business is doing great.
They could stay in the business as a handheld developer. That would be interesting.
And then handheld hardware and
no home console.
And then take all those ridiculously good IPs and make, you know, third party titles.
So here's the Achilles heel to that argument. Speaking of Achilles heels, is that right now one of their explanations for why it's been so difficult for them to get Wii U product out is that they underestimated the resources required to jump into an HD world. So, you know,
they had so much time to like look at that market and do research and see what other companies were doing.
I guess when they said, hey, we're not doing that. They really weren't doing that. we're not doing an HD.
They dramatically, look, if you go back to GDC circa, you know, Xbox 360 launch, you had lots of developers talking about, you know, especially like the second year in, holy crap, doing art for, you know, 720p and larger screen sizes is killing us. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a huge resource drain. It takes a tremendous amount of work. And so the information was out there, and Nintendo, for some hot reason, didn't.
Well, and hopefully the process of doing that has gotten quite a bit more efficient since.
Well, for studios that have been doing it for 7 and 8 years, sure.
Yeah.
But Nintendo hasn't been doing it for 7 or 8 years.
At all. Yeah.
So back to your argument. Like, so now if I want to take those games to other platforms, suddenly, I mean, that makes a very real comparison of Mario versus Rayman.
True.
And you know how good Rayman is right now.
Yeah.
And when Rayman is a multi-platform title and Mario is a multi-platform title next to it, do I think Mario is still really valuable? Sure. And is it going to be marketed great? Sure. And are people really going to know it? Of course. But when they see the two games, now Mario really has to be pound for pound punching at that weight.
Well, it should be.
It's such a good IP that I think, you know, to a certain degree saying, oh, well, you know, there's too much competition for Mario. I mean, you don't really come out of the gate with a stronger starting position than having a stable of characters like that.
It's Mario. Just, like, yeah, what's a more recognizable, likable character that people?
But to your point,
I don't disagree.
But like, what you look at what they've been doing with those characters, those IPs and stuff lately, and it's almost always evolutionary as opposed to revolutionary. Like, you don't see a lot of new.
It's very, very. It's very much incremental evolution of stuff, right? And that's another complaint that we've had for a long time now. Where's the new IP? Where's the new adventures? You know, how many? And, you know, we had that argument too about like, how many more Mario Karts do you want? Well, I want more Mario Karts because there's always a new gamer coming into the fold. Right. And I can always see new things in Mario Kart. But at the same time, where's something innovative and new?
Yeah, Mario Kart's a known quantity, like totally beyond known at this point.
Yeah, so. But Mario Kart never gets boring either. Yeah. Like just, you know what it is. You know that everyone in your house will be able to play with you. Like Mario Kart, that's a staple.
Well, it's like their equivalent of Madden or some sort of like, you know.
Yeah, and they're not exploiting it the way EA does. And they should be.
So there you go, folks. I concede. I think that at this point, after this news, Wii U is in dire enough situation that they really are going to have to, you know, seriously consider a price drop to get hardware moving. And that's when they have software, because even a price drop right now wouldn't move hardware because there's still nothing to put into it.
Right.
All right, well, we'll give you more to put into your ears. If you stick around, take our first little quick break. When we come back, we will catch up on some of the Xbox news and then move into games, your questions, all that still to come on Weekend Confirmed. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service for 30 days. One audiobook to consider is Ender's Game, the special 20th anniversary edition by Orson Scott Card. The war with the buggers has been raging for 100 years, and the quest for the perfect general has been underway for almost as long. Enter Andrew Ender Wiggin, the result of decades of genetic experimentation. Is Ender the general the Earth so desperately needs? The only way to find out is to throw him into ever harsher training at battle school, to chip away and find the diamond inside, or destroy him utterly. That's Ender's Game, the special 20th anniversary edition, available on audible.com. Go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed for your special offer. That's audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. All right. So moving on, how about some Xbox One news? Lots of interesting little tidbits as we're getting closer to the launch coming out. One of them came out on Major Nelson's podcast this very day. They've raised the clock speed on the GPU by 6.5%.
Overclocking, baby.
Can you explain that?
So basically, they've raised the GPU clock, which is the GPU is the graphics processing unit. Mm-hmm. They raised the clock speed from 800 to 853 megahertz. So it's about a 6.5% increase.
A difference that makes a great news story, but will probably be imperceptible to most gamers.
Dude, it's
especially
frames.
They have no comparison.
It's 1.3 frames per second better, and we now don't know how many more teraflops it does. The funny thing is, so explaining it is this, is that computer processors are all speed rated based off of how hot they get, running at what frequency. And essentially what they're saying is that they've determined through a lot of testing and whatever yields they're getting that they can safely run the processor at a higher clock speed than what they had originally spec'd,
right,
and stay within their thermal tolerances.
Now, do you think this announcement is in response to the whole Digital Foundry thing that they,
of course,
their story where they're
of
like,
course. Yeah, of course, PR and Microsoft and PR are spinning these things to try and stay, you know, at least in the fight as far as the tech goes.
Right.
And I don't think that, I think that it's almost a case of them making it more of a story than it would be, because the people who are going to get fixated on the tech specs of these two boxes are a small group within the larger group of people that are going to play it. Yeah, there's going to be a group. I mean, I was guilty of it. I was guilty of looking at the PS4 spec and going, holy shit, that thing looks badass. Mm-hmm. And it looks a little more badass than what we hear about Xbox One. Although we didn't, the funny thing is we didn't even know what the clock speed of the GPU was before this. So it's like, hey, we increased it from 800 to 853. Well, right, nice of you to finally say that it's 800. Cool. I
know. And then let us know that it's been increased. Like, who knows if it actually, like, if it's a
faster
new finding for them. They could have just, like, been holding on to this little piece of cool news to release when they wanted some good spin.
And the other piece is that they talked about how they have a 100% right to the silicon driver for the video, for video driver out now. It's like, who, like, no one cares. Like, it's great. Like, sure, the tech people think that's great. But, like, no one even understands what does that mean?
Right. In practical terms.
In practical terms, you know, what does this get me in my games? Which is really all we who are gamers get terribly cared about. The good news is, though, that they do have final dev kits out there. So, basically, what they're saying is they're in the home stretch. They have, I think this is as much saying, look, the product's coming out. It's done. We're not having troubles that some of you may have been thinking we're having, and we're in pretty decent shape, and devs are putting stuff together.
Well, and let's be honest, when all this stuff comes out, you're going to have to look to first party titles to see if there are any real differences here, because I think third party stuff is like last gen. It's going to be built on one lead platform, optimized for both. You're not going to see, you know, one significantly better than the other, you know, if it's the same game on two consoles. But first party might see where those.
And the important piece about having these final dev kits out, folks, if you're interested, is last week we had this discussion and a few people in the threads, especially on GAF, were very upset about me saying that it's not a big deal if they're showing software on a PC dev unit as opposed to a dev kit. And you made an argument, or so many of you made the argument, that the deal is that, of course, you could have more spec thrown at it when it's on a PC. And my response to that is, well, of course you would, because the dev process naturally involves optimization at the end of the cycle. So if you're looking at a demo at E3 that's running on a dev kit, all that tells me is that the developer had the resources to spend against optimizing their size to run on the dev kit hardware in that vertical slice that was the demo.
Right.
Doesn't mean their whole game's been optimized yet.
No.
Because they're still, it's not like they're developing it on a dev kit. It just means that they optimized this one vertical slice and made it work on the dev kit. And we've seen all kinds of wizardry and, you know, fooling around. It's the main reason that, you know, games had to be playable for Games Critic judging over the last few years. It's like,
And the Aliens Colonial Marines demo situation is a rare beast now, because nobody wants to, you know, give a demo that's better than the final product,
right,
you know,
right,
if they're representing it as such.
So my point about that was, with any demo, whether it be on a kit or on a PC, the important part is whether or not the slice that's being demoed for you is representative of the game, or if it's just, you know, a fantasy.
Some smoke and mirrors.
And at the end of the day, the game that you get on the console is the game you get on the console, and it will be optimized, hopefully, and it'll have to run on that machine, and either it works on that or it doesn't. But if it runs on a dev kit now or if it runs on a PC kit now, that's really immaterial, because different devs especially have different cycles, different ways that they run their production, and many of them save that optimization for the very end of the production process.
Now, couldn't you argue also that this generation, upcoming generation, the architecture is even closer to PC architecture, and in some cases identical to PC architecture, so that
makes even more sense,
I guess.
Well, plus it's their new console, so they probably don't have a ton of their own versions to go demo out. Like, I mean, when I used to work at like G4, like we would almost always get like these PC debugs to demo games. Like, you very rarely saw them bringing in the big old consoles to demo their games. It was just common to see that, so you didn't even question it.
It's optimization. It happens at the end of the process. All right, so there you go. And by the way, for what it's worth, at QuakeCon, which is going on this weekend, howdy to all the Shackers down in Dallas. Having a great time at QuakeCon. Hope you're having fun in the Bring Your Own Computer lab, of course. QuakeCon, Carnac, in his opening keynote, said that the Xbox One and PS4 are very close. That was a direct quote, very close by his assessment, and that they're both very good. So
Carnac approved.
That's good. Well, you know, and he's one of the dudes that, you know, I'd take his opinion to heart.
Yeah, I don't understand half the things he says, but like, if he approves it, then I approve it.
That's right.
So also on the Xbox One front, we learned this week from Michael Dunn, the Xbox Live program manager, about their new community-powered reputation model. Did you guys see this?
No.
Oh, wait.
Yes, I did see this.
So you're going to be graded green, yellow, or red based on your online behavior, Mr. Jeff Mattis, and we will know whether you are a good player, needs improvement, or avoid me.
Yeah. Now, is this activity or like behavior?
Behavior.
Guess I got to change my stanky dick gamer tag.
I probably so. Yeah. Christian's going to be in a lot of trouble, obviously.
Obviously.
So here's what they've unveiled. They've developed this community-powered reputation model where you'll be able to now mute and block players directly. So that's something you obviously you've always been able to do, but you'll be able to apply when you get muted or blocked directly, that will go into your permanent record. And so they have this algorithm that's going to assess actions that are taken towards your gamer tag, and then you'll be color coded so that people will be able to see your color coding on your gamer card. And like I said, you'll be green for a good player, yellow for needs improvement, red for avoid me. And you'll get warnings if you fall into, you know, when you start to fall into the yellow zone, you'll start getting system warnings of,
hey, stop being a douche.
Jeff, you've been a bad boy. Now,
are there repercussions for being in the red? Other than just being red?
Well, people will avoid you and you'll have the scarlet letter.
You'll play with all the other red.
You know, you'll have to walk around.
Red matchmaking?
Yeah.
Like just matchmaking for douchebags?
You'll be the Hester Prynne of Xbox Live.
That would be a bummer,
the
sure.
The Scarlet Gamertag.
It'd be a terrible shame. Here's the thing, and I think this will be a big factor in how people receive it. They have had this PhD come out and talk about the algorithm that they've developed and how, you know, how well it's going to be able to sift through all of this data and make good decisions. For instance, recognizing, obviously, one of the first things people say, oh, well, someone will run a smear campaign against me, and then I'm screwed. And so they're going to obviously be watching for all these things. And the acid test will be, how well does this actually work? How well does it work? That's actually the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
How well does it work? Does it really work where people who are being shitty are getting yellowed and redded? Or does it work where people who are shitty get good people turned yellow and red? Or is there just a way to wholly circumvent the thing? Like, if I'm a member of some, you know, clan that likes to troll people, can I set it up to where everybody in my clan gives me favorables all the time?
Yeah, so or just get a 20 those like 3-month accounts and just constantly make new accounts so you're constantly defaulted in the green. There's ton. I can already see plenty of ways to game the system.
Although if you're going to those lengths, you know, good on you, I guess, for being like king so, douchebag.
But yeah, are they edge cases? Are those slim enough edge cases that won't be a big thing and the system will work? I mean, I don't want to sound cynical. I'm excited that they're trying more because we've complained many times about how Xbox Live is often associated with this place that you go to play, and suddenly it's like a really not fun experience.
Yeah, there's a lot of room for improvement.
But you go to PS4 and frequently no one's using voice chat. So it's like you get one or the other. It's either
another issue though.
Right.
Yeah, because of the...
Because no one's using it.
Yeah, and
you need a Bluetooth.
And because of the Bluetooth headset thing.
Yeah. So. I mean, I do like that they're doing something because it can get very abusive on there. And I think that the true test of it, if, to me, this working means it deters people from being dicks. Like, I don't necessarily think that it's going to punish people who are douchebags because they don't care. They're being mean because they want to be mean. Like,
right.
Having a color on their gamer tag is not going to affect them. I think if it deters people from being mean and it, they're not mean to begin with, then I think it's working.
It provides a little bit of the social order element.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
Like the police. It's the police, but not really the police, but it's enough social order that, look, the test
you
for me,
and
if it works.
Keepers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I hop into games and am able to have an experience that's a little more fun, that really the acid test would be if you could hop into a game of Call of Duty and have it not just be a, oh my God, why did I leave my microphone on?
Right.
Or why, oh right. Shit, I forgot to turn chat off before I got in.
Right. And as opposed to, I need to mute this one person. It's like, I only want one person's voice in my ear because everybody else here is just completely ridiculous.
So speaking of Call of Duty, a little bit of Call of Duty ghosts in the news. If you're excited about that, it seems like you're not having as many friends as you used to have. Call of Duty ghosts in the Activision earnings call was revealed that their pre-orders are lagging well behind what Black Ops 2 did. CEO Eric Hirschberg said, though, that it was no big deal because it just reflected that people hadn't decided what platform they're going to be playing on yet. That's all it is. Yeah. That's all it is. Nothing to see here.
I'm sure that's some people.
That's some nice spin. But I think it's partly true.
Five choices because PC, right?
Yeah.
So there'll be five. And Wii. So that's six platforms?
Well, and bear in mind that I think the release date.
Well, they're still talking. So do you think there are people really confused about, like, which one am I going to.
No, but the release
date. Am I going to play this on PC or am I going to play it on my Wii?
The release date for Ghost, though, predates the Xbox One launch by like 3 weeks or whatever. 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. So, I mean, I get that. Right. There's no way to figure out which version is quote unquote better or which one's going to be. I mean, you may not even be decided which console you're going to get.
All right. So you two, how much do you buy that this is just people not deciding which platform they're going to buy
just?
On? And how much of it is
people being burned out?
It's a whole nother Call of Duty, really.
God, I hope it's console fatigue. Like, seriously. I mean, not console fatigue, but Call of Duty fatigue. I hope it's that. I don't necessarily think it's all that,
though. I think it's definitely Call of Duty fatigue. I think that. It's also some people being undecided. I mean, there's a lot of choices out there. And if you're someone like me, you're probably going to get all those consoles. And so you're going to have even more choices. And so I'm probably going to wait and see to what my friends buy their Call of Duty on. And it's also a game that comes out. They're going to release. It's not a game that's going to sell out. They're going to have so many copies of that game because of how well it sells. So I definitely think that there is a group that is debating, but no, it's fatigue. I mean,
well,
and
there's a bit of spin in what he was saying in that it implies that everybody's going to get some version of it at some point. They just haven't made up their minds yet. And I think there may be some drop off, you know, like, but again, if it comes out and it reviews really well and people are, you know, the Call of Duty audience starts to migrate over there as people start picking up the next gen consoles, you know, the audience will migrate. I don't think it's going to have the build up to the audience that the last couple of Call of Duty games had, but you never know.
Here's another thing. What's cool about ghosts?
Well, they're see-through. They go through walls.
The dog, right?
No, but you get my point. Is before in Call of Duties, you went
Soap. I loved, and I love Price, and
you went
I
to
love mo- that
you went
story.
To Modern Warfare, and you understood like Modern Warfare. Oh, okay, I see. It was Call of Duty in World War II. Now it's Modern Warfare. I get that. And then Black Ops. Okay, I understand Black Ops. It's all these weird covert actions and all that kind of thing. Ghosts.
Yeah.
What is it?
I mean, did you guys see the E3? I mean, yes, no one else saw the E3 demo, like not the mainstream gamers, but like, I feel like they're making an effort to kind of explain this new world, but this new world seems very isolated and you don't seem like you're part of this big team anymore. And it's like,
you're not.
It's like you and your brother and your dog, which it sounds like a great, you know, like indie drama, but it's also, it might be a tough sell for Call of Duty gamers who are used to these like big action.
I think
let's
that's
call
a big,
in the guard.
So I think that's a, I agree. I think that's a really big part of it. And I think that the dog was really hokey.
Yeah.
And I think they, somewhere along the line, someone didn't realize that we're going to get one shot to give people some idea of something to identify with ghosts.
Yeah.
Do we want it to be a German Shepherd with a backpack?
The dog
cam?
Should have been a really cool footnote that they had at the end where it's ghost like, oh, and
been,
we got the dogs in it.
It should have been the Predator tech. It should have. Yeah. That's why they're ghosts, because they have Predator tech that they can make them like camouflage
right.
invisible.
See, now, and that message would be way more interesting and
so
exciting people.
Cooler.
So I think that would be way cooler. I think that would get people interested. And I think the other question, and I'm not a member of the Call of Duty active multiplayer community, but having watched the way the stats run, I wonder how much interest they have in having another title to add to the, you know, cafeteria line, which is already segmenting people. It's like, well, are we playing Modern Warfare 2 or are we playing Black Ops 2? And, you know, every time they've had one of these jumps, some group has been left behind because there are features and benefits of each of the game's multiplayer suites that they liked particularly. And what's the big selling point to this one?
Well,
and we don't know yet, right?
It's new. Yeah.
No, and I think it goes back to that whole iterative versus, you know, revolutionary in terms of what you're doing. If you're releasing a game every freaking year, and yeah, they're doing a new engine and this is a new generation of consoles, it's not quite the same thing, but they're not changing any of the fundamentals of the game. They're building on a foundation that is well established. You know, there's not a whole lot of, I mean, it's a lot of it's building the technology to support.
Well, and speaking of technology, last but not least, the other thing is, in comparison relative to the other games that we saw across E3, it shows its age.
Yeah, not that.
It just, look, it's still cinematic and dramatic in the way it's presented, but it does not look top tier in visuals anymore. It just doesn't.
Can we just say that if you have a franchise that runs for 3 or 4 years or whatever, have some demarcation point where it's like, okay, after your fourth sequel, you have to take 2 years off or three. Like, you can't keep fucking cranking out this because I think long term, it does more to hurt the gaming market than. Short. I mean, you get the short term gains, but you've, like you said, you bifurcate the audience. You know, you don't really evolve the game itself, so you end up with sort of.
Well, it's a first person shooter, so I feel like it's already difficult to evolve it because it's so limited to what you can do. You can change gameplay wise. Like, it has to be the camera here, and it has to be this kind of gameplay.
Well, okay, but what about take a cue from Deus Ex, right? And I'm not saying make Call of Duty Deus Ex, but like. Shit, what's preventing somebody from making a really good shooter with a solid story and some dialogue trees and some optional stuff, you know? Yeah, like
you guys, and I agree with you, you're on a much more intellectual level yeah. than even what I'm thinking. What I'm saying is that if you're going to go out there with this big demo at E3, you can't get outclassed on the screen. And they got outclassed on the screen.
They had the best chairs, though. Of any demo, it was velvet on the walls. That was, you walk into the demo room and there's velvet on the walls, these big, lush, like comfy leather chairs. And on each chair is the nicest E3 free shirt I've ever had with the Ghost logo on it. I'm not saying it was the best demo, but man, that was a nice demo room.
If swag is what sells you on your game.
I'm a big fan of swag, though, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I realize that they are still a current gen and next gen title. So clearly, you know, if you're looking at a only PS4 title or an only Xbox One title, it's going to look better. But that used to be like Call of Duty's, you know, one of their big push pins.
Selling point. Look how great it is. And it's 60 frames. And
yeah.
It's, yeah.
So, all right. Let's talk about some games.
Games.
Who wants to talk about? Oh, you know what? I want to hear about Shadowrun.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually really, really want to hear about Shadowrun.
I am, I'm probably, I don't know, a few hours in at this point.
So those of you guys, you know the history out there, Shadowrun brought back by Kickstarter. This is one of the big Kickstarter success stories now, I would say.
And I remember playing the Shadowrun pen and paper RPG with friends back in.
So first of all, because a lot of people probably have heard Shadowrun, but don't necessarily know the world. Describe the world of Shadowrun, because it's one of the most interesting and cool parts of that.
Well, it's basically cyberpunk. I mean that sort of thing.
Technomage.
Yeah, it's a blending of, you know, technology and magic, and it's sort of like, and you know, it takes place in a future,
so near future,
dark future. Yeah.
It's a near future world where magic has returned to the earth,
right.
And as a result of magic returning to the earth, now you have all of the trappings of fantasy. So you've right. got wizards and magical creatures and. Machine guns.
Yeah. And then you've got like, yeah.
And helicopters.
Hackers.
And, yeah, yeah. And then you've got the Matrix rolled in there as well.
Yeah. So it's like, it really, you know, the type of character that you play in the game actually has a pretty big impact. If you've seen screenshots and stuff, you can, you already know the art style of the game is really cool. It's an isometric perspective fixed. And it's very reminiscent of like, you know, old school RPGs like Planescape or Baldur's Gate or stuff like that. So it's, but it's more, the combat stuff is more tactical, sort of like an XCOM light. I mean, it's not that much lighter than XCOM. I think just real quick about the combat. And I remember reading an article about this where the developers were talking about difficulty, and they said, you know, a lot of people were complaining normal. They were just breezing through everything. They didn't really feel like they were ever really threatened. I'm sort of feeling that way on hard, because that's where I started, because, you know,
everyone kind of advises. Yeah, the advice has been crank it up to hard for starters.
Yeah. Crank it up to hard for starters. And it's a bit more challenging. You have to think a bit more in combat. And the combat system is solid. It doesn't quite feel as good as XCOM does, but it's very, very similar. It's very, you know, you have action points that you're allocating. You're deciding where to go, where to take cover, you know, depending on how many action points you have, you can, it's set up a little differently, because you can use your action points to fire your gun. If you don't move at all, you can fire your gun extra times, or you can run and then fire or whatever. So you're dealing with a pool, as opposed to XCOM, where you have, you know, in this is your movement phase, and sometimes you can supersede that with an ability, but for the most part, it's pretty rote, or
regimented,
sequential. Yeah. Regimented. So combat is good. Story is, I mean, the writing in the game is excellent, which it really needs to be excellent, because it's a lot of text. It's a lot of, you know, conversations with characters. You get a little portrait, and it's, you know, reading stuff. And if it weren't as well written as it is, I probably wouldn't still be playing it, because there's a lot of, you know, dialogue and dialogue choices and stuff. But all very well written. I'm playing as a Decker, my character. So, you know, you have the ability to jack into terminals and hack stuff, and, you know, depending on the character that you select, you'll be able to interact with the world in legitimately different ways. So it's not like the same exact experience if you switch character types.
But it is super linear.
Yeah, you know, it's a campaign, it's a story. But you know, how you get through that story, there are slight branches depending on you know, what class you're
playing. So if I'm coming into this from never having played Shadowrun before, but now I'm like, okay, this sounds like a kind of cool world.
Yeah.
What's my entry into the game? Like, how do I pick my character? What sort of characters do I have to choose from? What's the story? What's the setup for the game?
Well, if you've played any sort of these types of games before, you know, RPG, turn-based strategy, you know, with a story, you'll be fairly familiar. I would suggest, based on how the game is set up, I've only tried a couple of the different character classes, but look through them and you'll find archetypes that you're familiar with, ones that you aren't. Pick one that looks fun, because from what I've been able to tell so far, it's like, yeah, I want to play this way. And there's a lot, all the characters have a lot of stats. So you can, even once you've picked a class, you can go, oh, this is normally a ranged character, but I want to give them some melee ability, or I want to, you know, beef up different skills that aren't typically.
Did they sort of stay out of that world where sometimes you'll play an RPG and there'll be multiple character classes like that, and some characters are easier to play the game with and others are more difficult, and so the challenge is, oh, well, you know, you want to play that character. That character is an expert class character.
Oh, it does. I think there's a bit of that, like, play style-wise. There are definitely characters where you're just really focusing on clearing the enemies as quickly as possible, and you're not really looking for alternate ways to solve problems or whatever. But here's another example. When you're creating your character, you actually get to select a dialect type that you are familiar with. So I'm dialect's probably the wrong word, but for example, my Decker, I chose security. So whenever I talk to somebody who's like a security guy or a whatever, I have special dialogue options where I know how to talk their lingo.
Oh, I like that.
So it's like, you know, you feel kind of like you inhabit the role a little bit more, and you're like, oh, okay, it feels like my character is a little more personal. But it's good. I think the campaign's pretty short. Like I said, I'm only a few hours in, but people are saying 8 to 12 hours, depending on how much you mess around with side quests and stuff like that. The mod or the level editor or whatever, the level creation, campaign creation tools are really robust. I'm really looking forward to see what people do with that, with those tools.
Do you think you'll go back and play with other characters too? So just to sort of see what's up
in the first campaign, I might, once I'm done, I'll probably take a break before I go back, because I don't think, as much as there are little differences, depending on who you select, the story is going to play out more or less. But again, you know, I mean, I don't say that with 100% confidence, because I've only tried a couple of different characters. So it's conceivable that there are some big changes that I haven't encountered yet based on different character classes. But it's a solid, you know, turn-based or RPG with turn-based combat, isometric, well-written, really cool art.
So throwback or
yes,
modern celebration? Or both?
It's a little of both. Like okay. Visually, it's definitely updated, you know, celebration. But yeah, most of the gameplay tropes, the dialogue trees and the skill selection, and it's all very old school RPG. It doesn't feel dumbed down at all. Like it's not like a streamlined stat selection.
So it sounds like you're pretty much a thumbs up on it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. If you like those kind of games, go for it. If you haven't been particularly turned on by, you know, turn-based strategy or those isometric RPGs, it may not change your mind, but it's a very good example of what can be done in that medium. It kind of makes me excited about, you know, I'd like to see that sort of game resurface more, people start making more of that and actually innovating more on that formula.
Yeah, so like maybe the return of a game such as this gets designers thinking about, you know, we really enjoyed those games. Yeah. We really enjoyed this model with the isometric camera, with the tactical combat, with good dialogue that had trees and lots of options. How can we evolve that? Because it is still very much a design from 10 years ago, right? And we love Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 and all of those games, Icewind Dale in that world.
Well, in fairness, there's a whole audience of people like myself that are like, you know, turn-based strategy or turn-based combat games kind of disappeared for a while. And you're just like, man, by the time this thing comes out, you're like, you know, or XCOM, I guess, was the first real meaty thing.
Right.
But yeah, it's great. I mean, if you like those kind of games, they're still really fun. They're still really solid. You know, I would love to see a Shadowrun game that is, you know, fully voiced at some point, because the writing that they did, I think, is really solid. So
I know, it's still fun. It's also fun though to have that experience of, I mean, part of the experience of those games,
hearing your own voices and
right. You establishing those characters for them, and you know,
and you definitely get that here. You definitely get, you know who you're talking to when you talk to them, and they have different inflections and slang, and you know,
I like that thing about, I like the deal about the slang thing you talk about, or the dialect.
Yeah. It's like,
that's clever. It's a clever way to bring in that, here's an extra part of the tree. And that's something that PC games used to always do, right?
And there's at least half a dozen, or I think more than that, half a dozen choices of like which, you know, faction you want to be familiar with so you can talk to them. It's in atypical ways. So anyway, thumbs up if you're looking
for
a good.
How would you say that compares to the Necromancer in Borderlands 2?
The Necromancer is so overpowered.
Yeah?
So overpowered.
She looks pretty badass.
She's okay. It's her robot, the Deathstriker, Deathkiller.
So good.
Oh, you play Necromancer too?
Yeah.
God, you see, here's the problem with having gone as deep into Borderlands 2 as Ariel and I have. The thought of starting a character at level 1 is just... I don't think I could do it.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason I did is because I had a bunch of friends who just downloaded it. Because I think it's one of the deals on Xbox where you get it for like $20. So I had a bunch of friends who were like, okay, well, we never tried it. We're going to get it.
And oh, my
so
God.
I
was and like, multiplayer okay. is where it's at.
Yeah. So because there's four of us, I was like, sure, I'll re-roll. And because I had bought the Necromancer when it first came out and I had never played it. And no, it's pretty sweet. Mm. But like I'm playing... I've been in like... it's like a video game drought, but then I've also been like in a super video game mood. So
how does that work?
Not well. So I also finally finished Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, which was an amazing ending.
And by amazing, if you haven't finished this game, the ending is so utterly lovely, ridiculous.
It's just, I know you're thinking, oh great, they're building it up to be so big and great. I'm not going to appreciate it. You don't even know like what's going on. And then, so, like, I talked about how much I liked the game and how much I thought that it was, like, in my opinion, it was the best soundtrack of a game of the year. And I also thought it was the best writing of the year because I just loved that style of humor and just the callback to the gaming industry. And I love those jokes. Like, I got a lot of hate on Twitter for liking a game more than The Last of Us. Like, that specifically. Like, how dare I like a game in any capacity more
don't,
than last
don't you
of
take
us.
This hobby seriously?
And apparently not. I know.
Where's your beret? And your
my little string mustache.
That's right. Your little French cigarettes.
Yeah. Oh, and then I also play the BioShock Infinite DLC.
We just raced through everything. You're like, all right, did this, all right.
All right, questions. Come at me, guys.
Well, the Necromancer, I would imagine, and maybe this is your assessment too, is that it's an easy character or an easier character to solo with. Because of that crazy robot that you can summon.
Yeah, I mean, it's like just, you have your own tank.
Yeah. Well, and the enemies seem to go after that guy pretty regularly. Yeah.
Or
like you send him out and
they're attacking. He goes after those enemies.
Yeah. No, and he kicks ass, too. Yeah, he's not like he's fantastic. Just a damage sponge. He's like killing dudes for you.
And at the same time, you're running around with a rifle or an assault rifle in your hands as well.
Yeah,
so
you have just as much
your tag
power.
Team.
Yeah. 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 No, it was really fun to play. And it was fun because my friends just assumed that I was really great at the game. Like, oh, you're so good at the game. Like, no, I'm not going to. Well, if they listen to this, now they're going to know.
You're like, yeah, I am.
No, it's the class so good. I chose.
Oh, I'm the best.
Like, yeah, hell no, yeah. No, I just
I'm pro.
Class
Don't
choice.
Try the Necromancer. It's really hard to play with her. Because you should stick with whatever class you chose.
Yeah,
this
you haven't
really
seen her
hard.
Borderlands 2 trophy, yeah, clearly.
Obviously. Yes. So.
So what else?
I don't know. Blood Dragon.
Did
Why did you wait so long? Blood Dragon's not long.
I don't know. Why did I?
And the ending of Blood Dragon, for those of you who haven't gotten to it, if you've got to go to the end. Because first of all, Blood Dragon's not long. And second of all, the ending is the perfect final confrontation, not confrontation.
Right.
It ought to have just been playing the final countdown through the whole thing. Because,
that
would just fit the whole thing, right? And,
yeah.
And I won't spoil any of it past that, but it's just utterly ridiculous and fantastic.
Yeah, I think you get the idea that it's a longer game than it is because you have that option of clearing all the garrisons.
Yeah, and then, of course, they just did the deal where you can reset now and do them all over
again.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God.
But there's really no point in doing all that because you really don't need to like have a million upgraded weapons. They're just really... If you'd like to kill dudes, go do it. But yeah, no, I should have. I wish I had beat the game.
I'd like to go kill dudes virtually. Why not?
In the context of video games, yes.
I think they're actually.
Right, I should have made that.
They're androids in that, right? Remember, they're all android creations or something.
Okay, but then aren't the scientists real?
Yeah, the scientists are real.
But then, I kill them too.
So probably most interesting of all this stuff is the BioShock Infinite DLC. But you don't see like you didn't even like.
Well,
oh, and I played that. Eh.
Well, it's just that I mean, it was this. Awesome surprise because like Ken Levine starts tweeting like, oh, I got big BioShock news. Oh, we got big news coming up. And so like we're all start anticipating what they're going to announce. And then, you know, 8 a.m. comes and like, we're going to announce the first set of DLC and it's out right now. And so like,
Yay! Yeah,
it was very Mac of them. And I thought it was very cool because there's no promotion for it. There's no trailer for it. I mean, prior to release. And so like I was really excited for it. And it was only $4.99 or 500 Microsoft points.
Awesome.
So,
I'm going back to Columbia. There's going to be this new story.
Yeah.
I'm going to get to like enjoy my character again. It's going to be so good.
And so,
Booker. Yay.
I didn't do any research on it. I just like went in and I clicked my campaign and like continue. And it was like at the lighthouses again. And I'm like, DLC activate. So then that's not right. You don't do that. You go to the menus and then you go downloadable content. And then Clash in the Clouds is really just a little arena. It's like a horde mode that you play by yourself.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which sounds awesome.
I mean, so you start out with no upgraded weapons. You have a pistol and you don't have your health. You don't have your shield. You don't have your assaults upgraded. It's just starting over. And you go do these like little mini battle arenas, which are basically the exact same assets from the game. Mm-hmm. So like you play in like five levels that are just the big battle sequences in the game. So it's like all the fun of BioShock Infinite with none of the story and none of your upgrades. So yeah, I mean, like I know that probably.
But you did like the combat quite a bit, though, right? I mean, the combat in the game was really good.
Yeah, I mean, this DLC is just combat. You know, they did tease, you know, Burial at Sea, which sounds like it's going to be amazing, and I can't wait for it. But this...
Well, that was what I was going to ask you about. I mean, that was the lead up to, you know, talking about that. But this, so it literally is nothing. Are there the skylines in it?
Yeah.
So it's skyline combat, and you have to improve yourself throughout the course of it. So it's very, I mean, it borrows a pages from horde mode exactly.
It's like, horde mode. There's the mini challenges. Only use the shotgun in this one. They reach like 15 waves. There's bad guys, and there's the firemen, and there's the crows, and then there's like the mech dudes.
Does it do anything at all to further the story?
Nothing.
Oh.
No, because, I mean, that's...
It's an arena
thing. It's completely standalone.
It's like the Dishonored, like, Dunwall City Trials thing, right?
Yeah, like Red Knight Dishonored.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be a lot more fun if I had the ability to play with somebody else. Like, playing horde mode by yourself doesn't sound like the most boring thing, but it really is. Because there's a lot of strategy in it, and you can pull things through tears still. I mean, it's basically, anytime you had a big battle in the game, this is exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
Is Elizabeth, like, following you around still?
Yes, but she's not helping nearly as much. She'll maybe throw one thing assault the whole match. But it's okay because you can pull salts and med kits through tears and stuff. But I just felt so lonely to be doing all that combat in this big world where you know there should be a story and there's not.
Yeah. No,
there was just a lonely feel to it. I really wish it was co-op.
And you get to unlock stuff.
You get to unlock the things that I already had in single player.
So, you know, one thing...
And songs, so you can unlock the songs.
Levine did talk to Polygon a little bit about it and said, so I thought maybe we can do something where we give the player the opportunity to just play with the full tool set and all the powers and upgrades and everything and create far more challenging gameplay for them. So with that in mind, we gathered up the people really specialized in combat on Infinite and essentially told them the gloves were off. You guys can make whatever you want.
You know, the cynic in me says that that announcement is really, if you translated it, it's... Okay, I know we said we're going to have some single-player DLC coming out soon. It's not done yet.
Technically, this is single-player.
In the meantime, so here's some arenas, yeah. You know, like to I don't know. I mean, how much work? I mean, does
the weight of BioShock must be pretty massive. Because keep in mind, there's still the specter of a Vita game floating around
right.
there.
Right.
Which apparently
which he won't comment on.
Won't comment on, but I guess there's still... working away on.
He made it sound like it's out of his hands right now.
Yes, but I mean,
yeah, who knows?
Exactly. Who
this knows? Felt like, remember when there were rumors that there was going to be a multiplayer for Infinite?
Yeah.
This feels like they kind of were like, hey, remember how we started that? Let's use that. And then there are a lot of things where you can unlock like statues and you can unlock, you know, all the cool like covers of songs like Everybody Wants to Rule the World or Fortune Son. Mm-hmm. Like you can buy, you have to earn money in this and then you can buy those things in your own little room.
Hmm. So, well, that, I mean, that's kind of cool, but that's not like something
it's only $5. So, I mean, I feel like I shouldn't complain too much, but I don't like BioShock Infinite for the idea of Horde mode.
All right, so right. then how about Burial at Sea? So Burial at Sea, two-part adventure where you're going to take Booker and Elizabeth to Rapture, but not the Rapture we know from BioShock 1 and 2. This is still Utopia Land. This is still Andrew Ryan's baby, everything in full effect, everyone walking around in top hats.
So it's Happy Rapture.
It's Hapture. Happy it's Happy Hapture.
Hapture. Pending.
Yeah.
And even more interesting, in episode 1, you'll be playing as Booker, but in episode 2, you'll be playing as Elizabeth.
See, that's cool.
So
does she get a gun, though, or is it just going to be like puzzle solving? That would be my issue.
Well, it's before Rapture went to hell, so you're basically slaughtering innocent civilians.
I still want to slaughter innocent civilians.
You still want to decide whether or not to take the little sisters or not, huh?
I saved them the first time I played.
I hope it lets you punch Ayn Rand in the face. That would be awesome. Like that's the boss at the end.
So excitement level over this. You know, my immediate response to this was, this is the BioShock Infinite DLC we were looking for. But then a lot of people were like, no, it's not, because we want to go back to Columbia and have like another meaningful experience there. So I respect that as well. Maybe it isn't the BioShock Infinite DLC we're looking for. It is a love letter. Obviously, it's obviously, you know, hey, you loved BioShock and you loved Rapture, and Rapture was something really special.
It seems fan servicey, and I'm cool with that.
Well, and it could have some pretty cool precursor stuff for the original hero in the original BioShock.
I feel like they could
plant some seeds.
There's a lot of potential there for that. Exactly. I think there's a lot of ways that they could kind of make all three games, or at least the first and the third, kind of connect.
Right.
And put like maybe even if it's just with Easter eggs. Like kind of just make them, oh, this is why this is this way. Or maybe you know, DeWitt and our Elizabeth's actions are what put BioShock 1 into motion. Like, I mean, there's so much they can do to make fans just freak out. And then to your point, like, I liked Rapture so much more than Columbia.
Really? So much more.
So much more.
Because I thought Columbia was very interesting, but in
it didn't feel finished
in
to
the
me.
Time after finishing the game, it increasingly felt less realized. Good way to put it. It just wasn't as
polished.
Yeah, wasn't as much a thing. Yeah, Rapture was really something special.
It was a living world to me, and like it was a character in of itself. Yeah. Whereas Columbia really was. Just
and it was
location.
It's funny you would say it's a living world, because the Rapture that we came to was a dead world.
Mm-hmm.
The Rapture we came to in BioShock was past it being a living world, especially in 2, where things are all like broken and you know all the systems are shut off and segmented, and you know it's completely gone to hell. So it's funny you would call it a living world, but it did have a different feel to it.
I actually want, that's the most exciting thing about this DLC, is to be able to see Rapture before all the decay and all that sort of stuff. Because, conceptually, it was a pretty cool idea. It's just...
It kind of sounds like we're all really excited to go back to BioShock 1. We're like less excited about Infinite DLC. It's more like this is BioShock DLC.
And I feel like that was my response. And I think the good news is that there were a lot of folks out there who really liked Infinite in and of itself and were hoping to see more of Columbia. Mm-hmm. And I get that. And I would say you know, if I was in that camp, I would definitely feel disappointed that the DLC package for this game has nothing to do with this game. It's a battle arena, right, and then nothing to for the story. And I get it. By the way, this will be a spoiler. The fact that they opened the door, so to say, or literally right, opened the door to infinite possibilities, ha ha ha, in BioShock, did leave them the opportunity to do this. It's awful fast to go do it, and is just a fan service quick retreat what you wanted, because there were a lot of open scenarios from Booker's jump through a number of different timelines in Columbia that any individual one of those could have gone back and been explored as well.
Well, see, and I think that, and this is also minor spoiler if you haven't finished BioShock, but I also think that, or BioShock Infinite, but I think that they could have done something really interesting with illustrating how, because I'm pretty convinced that there's a strong case that can be made that Elizabeth and Anna Comstock are the same.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
So the exact same size and clothes, which, I mean, evidence number one.
Right. But, I mean, we can go into all that at some other point. But there's a lot of evidence that you pick up where you're like, you know, I broke everything down. I was like, you know what? You could actually make a really strong case that, you know, Comstock was a sick fuck that, you know, married his own daughter, like basically pulled her in. And then basically when he realized he couldn't have kids because the machine had screwed him up, he's like, well, I know that I had a kid and I'm going to go back. And that's why Anna Comstock freaks out when the kid comes back, because she's like, holy, it's me. Like, like, that's not cool. And maybe it created some sort of paradox or some sort of thing. But, you know, that's why she had to go. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
I'm just going to wait for Booker to, I'm just going to wait for Booker to, you know, turn to the camera and then walk around the corner and into the blue phone booth.
And it was all a dream.
All right, folks, we'll take a little break. When we come back on the other side, who knows? Maybe Mr. Kanata is making his way through customs. We don't know. Haven't heard from him yet. We still have some other games to talk about. We'll talk about some Dragon's Crown. We've got your questions. Lots more to come in the second half of Weekend Confirmed. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. All right, we are back. By the way, I should let you know that we are christening the new facilities for the Atlantis Group. Beautiful, beautiful new Hell facilities. Yeah. Only moved across the street, but I have to say, I'm really liking the new digs. So, those of you out there in the sound engineering business, if you need some studio space, these guys and gals here do awesome work, and they have a fantastic new facility here.
Guys, I'm from the future. I'm from later today, and I have some urgent, urgent news.
Jeff's here.
Yeah.
I got on a plane 3 hours from now, and I flew 14 hours to be here to tell you what happens later today.
It's your kids.
Yeah.
And?
It's your kids. Bruce, not you.
Bruce Willis, who's actually you later in life, is going to come and try to...
Going to try to kill me.
Trying to kill you.
Yeah. No.
So...
I literally drove from the airport to be here, to be in the new digs. And I suspect that the whole move was predicated on the fact that there is now zero cell phone service here, just so my phone won't go off.
There is zero cell phone service here in the midst new studio. Of, however, the internet works awesome.
That's good.
So we may actually be able to now do something we hinted at last week with Andrea, which is do some live chat during the show and hack and
for the people that can't hear what we're talking about.
Well, no, like, you know, like chat room chat, like have like some live chat and, you know, real audience participation. We might be able to get a stream going.
A stream would be good.
Holy
because audience
cow.
Participation without them hearing what we're saying is kind of difficult.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, random.
Yeah, it's them we don't want to hear, but they just want to hear us.
So what have you guys been talking about for the last 3 weeks?
Dude, we talked about
video games,
you know,
like stuff and things.
I like video
games.
You
missed the drinking last week.
I heard about that.
Everybody
read
loved
about
it.
The drinking.
Everybody loved it. It was great.
You universally applauded by all.
Of course, that's all.
I mean. I have lots to talk about.
So
I went to PAX.
I went to PAX.
How was PAX? What is PAX Australia like? What was the inaugural was awesome. PAX Australia like?
It was awesome. It was so much fun.
Are there
such
still
cool
kilts?
People. Yeah, I saw kilts.
Okay, cool.
I definitely saw kilts.
I wanted to know if utilikilts were like universal.
Yeah, I don't know if they were utilikilts.
Oh, wow. Okay, it changes everything.
Plus, they're like dead great.
Yeah, well, is that Scottish or Australian?
Oh, Scottish.
No, but you said kilt.
Oh.
That's a Scottish thing.
Oh.
Right.
All right. I agree.
You fall into that.
It was in
Australia. Yeah.
Can you keep that going?
I sure can. What would you like me to talk about?
I like it.
PAX Australia was fantastic, honestly. Amazing people, excited to be there.
So where did it take place? To me, like, give me like the rundown.
The Royal Showgrounds.
Which
the show horses?
There clearly were at other times of the year. Cool. Yeah, it was a place.
Wait, you mean there was like droppings still around? And
I wouldn't say that. They did a good job cleaning up.
Oh, okay, good.
But there was a big round outdoor amphitheater that was clearly marked as a track for horses to walk.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
But not like a racing track, but like a prancing track.
Presentation for, facility.
What is that?
Like
that
a parade, thing? Like a parade ground.
Yes. But what is that thing that...
horse dancing?
Yeah, that Mitt Romney's family does.
Yeah, and Romney's horse dancing...
Portage, what's it called?
It's called pretentious rich people activity.
However, have you ever seen the Lipizzaner Stallions? Because they're kind of amazing.
Anywho, that's where it took place, and they did an amazing job. Melbourne was, it's winter there, because up is down, left is right. The world is different.
And the
summer
right.
is
and
winter.
And the water goes the opposite direction in the toilet, right?
You know what? I wanted to test that. Every single toilet in Australia is now one of those shooty down straight ones.
Oh.
Shooty down.
What a letdown.
It was a total letdown. That was like the whole reason I went.
Hey, they're a lot more efficient though, right?
I think that they were on to us, and they just as a country decided wholeheartedly to just change all the toilets. We're not giving them the satisfaction.
Yes.
Bart Simpson was the last one to see it.
There's a taxpayer initiative we can all get behind.
Yeah. Anyway, it was just the atmosphere of PAX was just so cool because, you know, this is an area of the world that doesn't get events like this. And everybody across the board was just so excited to be there and to have something of that scale. Put
well, on I was say, what was the scale like? What was presented? What did you check out?
What did you
so
wear?
So much stuff. I was wearing
a Jinx shirt.
Probably. I saw the most impressive thing to me was the gigantic indie community that's on display that is really has popped up from so many closures of big studios in Melbourne and Sydney.
Right.
And by the way, several people told me to chastise you, Garnett, about calling it Team Bondi. It's Team Bondi. They want you to use the diphthong and... It's Team Bondi.
Team Bondi, you have my correction and apologies.
All right, moving on. And
did you see some of the guys from Chrome too, or all the folks who used to be at Chrome?
Yeah,
lots of good folks there.
There's a lot of really awesome studios that unfortunately, you know, went under.
Yeah.
But all those guys, all those really talented developers, have started just doing their own projects. And you know, PAX is great all over the North American versions of PAX are great at pushing indie games and having that be a real presence at the shows. And here was no different. And it was really cool to see all these local developers with some really awesome looking titles. And actually the new video show that I'm going to be doing, Newest Latest Best, we shot a whole episode and focused on some stuff.
Oh, dope.
So yeah, that'll
be
coming soon.
Very cool.
So you guys get to see some of that stuff, but I saw some awesome games, met a lot of really, really cool people. BioWare was down there in a big way.
What were they showing? What'd you get to check out? Talk about games. Tell us about the games you saw.
They
Mr. Kanata.
They did a talk. They were talking about the future of Mass Effect and the future of Dragon Age.
And what is the future of Mass Effect?
I mean, they didn't reveal anything that wasn't, you know.
There
I mean?
Will be a future.
Right. There will be a future. Right. Yes.
In the year.
Right. You know, it wasn't a big show for news. It was a big show, as PAXs tend to be. It was a big show for getting people together, celebrating it. A lot of cosplay in effect there. Mm-hmm. It was just really cool to see the energy and the excitement of actual gamers in an area of the world that I've never been before.
That's cool.
So I had a blast, man. I got to see some really cool indie games and talk to a lot of developers. And
did a little podcasting?
Yeah, we did a...
With one of our listeners.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is awesome.
Shane, who gave me, I will have to bring it next week because I didn't get my luggage. I don't have my luggage here
you
with me.
Didn't, but he, how does that work?
Yeah, I had to, I was trying to get here in time.
Okay. So you're just like, nah, it's cool. Yeah. You I don't keep need, this.
Hang on to this for me.
Never mind the ticking.
anyway, he gave us some local alcohol, which I'm sure, since alcohol has become the new
local,
the new black, I'm told.
Excellent.
So we will be, and I also tried Vegemite.
Oh, did you really?
And I have Vegemite here to bring for everybody.
I did see the was it Instagram 4-stage,
and it's dreadful, right?
Not as bad as I would have thought. Spoiler for eventual seeing of that.
You didn't start dry heaving like right on the spot.
No, yeah. It's a hilarious moment because the whole audience is like, stop, don't do it, don't eat it. Because everybody there knew what it tasted like. And so I was very scared.
Of course.
But it ended up being not as bad as I thought.
Do they call beer Foster's?
Is that no one drinks Foster's. It's all like local
Bloomin' Onions
IPA.
Bloomin' Onions.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's street vendors with Bloomin' Onions on every corner. It's like Starbucks.
I kept showing people tiny knives just to get them to try to tell me that it wasn't a knife.
Oh. That's not a knife, like that. Right, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah.
Anyway, it was a blast. It was. And I got engaged.
Congratulations!
No way!
Way!
No way!
No way, dude! Oh, dude, congratulations!
Thanks. There's hugging. Dude, I'm narrating.
Congratulations, brother. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that happened. It was a big trip for me. And I had a birthday. Awesome. And yeah. It was
good. Wait till we cook up the bachelor party.
It's going to be D&D.
Oh, dear God. Bachelor party podcast.
Yeah, it's going to be a problem.
It's not going to be a podcast.
Unlistenable.
It's not going to be a podcast. However, it will be better than Hangover 2.
Or 3, for that matter.
Or any subsequent hangovers.
But the as far as gaming goes, I had two, count them, two 14-hour flights.
And you can't sleep on flights.
I'm usually able to sleep on flights.
I sack out.
I'm usually able to sleep on flights pretty
well. Can you take
something? I don't like to refer to a story that was told on this show a while back for that reason. The flight there, I slept okay, but the flight back, I didn't sleep a wink, and all I did on my laptop was play Rogue Legacy.
Oh, dope.
And I'm on the very last guy. Have you finished it?
I have not.
No. How many generations?
A lot. My character is a level 110, wow. which means you only level when you do an upgrade in the skill tree. Mm-hmm. So I've died an order of magnitude more times than that, because there are times when I've died without being able to buy anything. I think it's my game of the year.
Ugh, I'm going to have to play this game. Here's the thing is, I'm going to have to play this game,
good.
And I'm going to be so late to the party, it's going to be like, oh, you want to talk about Rogue Legacy? Get off the show.
Well, I know that Grand Theft Auto is going to come out, and all the game of the year accolades are going to go to it, and I also know that it's a year with both Bioshock Infinite and Last of Us and Tomb Raider. And I talked about this on the panel at PAX, because we were kind of talking about games of the year. And as much as I love the artistry of Last of Us and Bioshock Infinite and Tomb Raider, and I can't deny the magnitude and the amount, the pure number of people that went into making those games, mm-hmm. and making something that is, they're truly extraordinary game experiences, all three of those games.
Yep.
I will take, and I think you'll back me up on this, mm-hmm. Jeff, I will take Rogue Legacy, Gunpoint, and Monaco.
Oh, see, those are like, yeah, those are all brilliant.
I think those three games for me are a better trio than Last of Us, Bioshock Infinite, and Tomb Raider. As good as those games are, and as much as I love those three games, those three indie games have provided such incredible experiences this year. And it's so hard to compare those things. We're in a place in the game industry where it's so tough.
Dude, you haven't even played Euro Truck Simulator 2, I bet.
I haven't.
Yeah. So.
I heard you guys talking. We're talking about
it. No, but you're...
even more meta. Did you see the number of people who posted afterwards that they were listening to us talking about Euro Truck Simulator while playing Euro Truck Simulator?
Yeah, it was pretty... Christian Majewski, the guy that developed Trauma, sent me a link on Twitter that's basically a compilation of video of... you know, extreme truckers, and it's like all people playing with picture-in-picture cam, Euro Truck Simulator. It's actually really funny, a really funny watch. So,
but Rogue Legacy, I think I know Grand Theft Auto is going to come out.
Okay, so look here. Why are you fixating on making that comparison? So we've done this. You and I have done this now for going on 3 years. And every year when we get to awards time, we have this same lamentation of
right.
Why are we trying to put this game that had 200 people put against it and has this an amazing presentation against an indie game? So just don't do it. Why? Okay. Let them be in their own world.
I have not had a great.
There can only be one.
Game of the year.
Game of the year.
There can only be one game of the year of its ilk. But I mean, look.
Well, that's the problem is coming up with ilks. What are the ilks?
Because a game of the year in the indie category versus game of the year in the AAA category, if you separate them, the AAA category is going to be the one that carries all the weight.
Have you not had years where you watched the Oscars and thought, you know what? I watched a couple of indie films that moved me more than this winner.
Every
year. Yeah, well, but indie films tend to be brought up more often in the Oscar, Best Picture discussion than the same thing in the.
But they still
aren't
going to have that challenge in punching pound for pound, and I think it puts these great games at a disadvantage. Even if there are folks like you and I who might make this great argument, obviously Rogue Legacy is getting like this huge amount of support. Monaco, I mean, I think the only problem Monaco has is that it was around for so long before it hit final full real release that people had gotten accustomed to how good it is. But it's a fucking amazing, really, really, really fun game.
Yeah.
But no matter how many of us who get excited about it, it's not going to capture the Game of the Year awards that are the big weighty awards. And we can make a whole other argument about whether those awards even matter for shit anymore, since there's no Oscars, so to say.
Yeah.
There's just different websites with their awards. But why not let the indie games enjoy their awards? That's what GDC is for. That's what the Choice Awards are for.
But does that marginalize them? Does that say, have your little space and you can play in your little sandbox?
No, that's what I'm saying is don't think of it as marginalizing. Think of it as celebrating them for being awesome in their thing.
Because it's like a weight class thing for boxing, right?
No, I get it.
You know?
But I also, the reason I made the comparison at all is because I haven't had a better experience playing a video game than Rogue Legacy all year. All three of those games that are AAA Game of the Year contenders right now for me, pre-GTA.
Mm-hmm.
And I could make an argument for any one of those three games, Tomb Raider, Bioshock Infinite, Last of Us. All three amazing games, artistic achievements on a high level. But all three of those games have a yeah, but for me. The accolades I'd throw on them, there's just there are things that are like, well, but there's this thing about.
And I think when you're talking about your favorite experiences of the year, it's different than saying. It's different than, you know, if you're dealing with a best games on X platform or best games, you know, best action games or whatever, it becomes a little bit more necessary to separate those two out to understand that if you have, you know, a game that was made by two dudes for, you know, $50,000 in their basement versus Last of Us, there should be some sort
even getting away from the development cost and team size. The beauty of these indie games is that by their very nature, they're more distilled expressions, right?
Right.
So, when they click, you're more likely to not have the butt clause because
they're simpler.
It is this pure expression of a thing. And when it speaks to you, you're like, oh, this totally is working for me.
Yeah.
Whereas a Last of Us or a Tomb Raider, there's so many branches of design within it that it is likely that at some point you're going to hit that, oh, I love it. Oh, but why did they do that?
Right. And in none of those three experiences, the indie three that I brought up, in none of them am I going, God, the world is so perfect. I'm so ensconced in the world that I want to just explore the world and I want to just, like when I say in Last of Us, oh, why did I have to kill people? I wanted to be exploring that world. I wanted to be it to be more real. We don't have that uncanny valley problem with these indies. In a sense, it's easier for them because they're just kind of doing one thing really, really well. And that's the thing with Rogue Legacy is the one thing that it does is perfect. I have teeny little like design thing. Like there's a couple of times where I felt like if I tried to turn my character around and he didn't turn, you know, like little tiny controller things, but almost perfect game. The path to progression is so well done. the carrots on the sticks are so well done. The variety, for what people have always said to me about Dark Souls, about trying to get me into Dark Souls, this game, I finally get it. But I think that the key for me to find the joy is that it has variety. It's that I'm not just ramming my head against this wall over and over. I'm ramming my head into a wall that's changing.
Every time.
Every single time. Or I can choose not to have it change.
And your head is changing every time.
Exactly. My blunt instrument is changing, and what I'm using the blunt instrument against is changing. And so it never feels like, oh, I just have to fucking try to get past this one thing that I can't get past. I need to get better at this, so let's try it a million different ways, and I'm going to learn these enemies because I'll encounter them in new rooms, and I'll learn the rooms in new ways, and everything is constantly being changed up, and it makes it so fucking fun. I cannot love this game more. It is addictive. I think about it when I'm not playing it. It's that kind of thing that I haven't felt really since Diablo 3, where I'll be lying awake in bed going, I just want to play. I just want to play that game. I just want to play it.
Are you going to play it again once you conquer it?
I don't know. I've put in a lot of hours into it. I feel like you could probably play it forever.
Well, because it's going to randomize every. I mean, you could start over and be right back at the beginning.
Yeah, and you can level up. Like, there's certain traits that you can level up 75 levels of, and I'm only like 20 something into them.
Oh god,
which is enough for me to. Tonight I will probably kill the last guy. He has two forms. And I can kill the first one. I just can't kill the second one yet. But I get really, really close every time. So if I just, level up a few more notches, I'll be able to take him down. I don't know if I'll play past that point. But goddamn, it's been a wonderful ride. And it is a spectacular game that everybody should play. And I actually love the graphics. I think they're perfect.
You sound like you're apologizing for that. What's...
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people think that indie game retro-ness is getting a little stale and is almost a crutch sometimes. I feel that sense.
I would love for someone to make that argument with me, because I would actually probably get angry about it. Because I think that's bull.
I feel like I've read that or I've felt a sense of that. And I can see certain games, somebody making the case of like, well...
It's a palette. Come on. It is a palette and it is expression. And matter of fact, what's awesome about, especially going into these older... 16-bit generation visuals, is that the limitation of the medium inspired artists to push themselves harder to do more with it, if that makes sense.
And that's true of any indie medium, in that the real financial constraints you have on yourself and the time constraints and stuff actually force you to create better art.
Right.
Usually.
Most art is that way. You need frames. You need something. You need limiters. And we can point out numerous examples of people without limiters falling off the deep end and creating crap.
Or not limits. Never finishing whatever it is they're doing, because they just spin off into the...
But dude, you have to play it. It is an addiction.
I don't know when I'm going to get to it, but I will endeavor to do that.
After you finish Witcher 2, obviously.
Well, so I have to get to that, which I haven't gotten to that because I've been playing Dragon's Crown, but I want to play
I really want to play Dragon's Crown.
Oh, it's really good.
I love those games.
Dude, Dragon's Crown is...
I love Odin's Sphere is in my top two or three.
So if you liked Odin's Sphere, but you didn't like the slowdown, you'll be super happy with Dragon's Crown. Dragon's Crown is the most amazingly fun. Just pick up. It's a brawler, right? So if you haven't played, if you haven't seen Dragon's Crown,
Golden
by the way,
Age or
Golden Axe.
Excuse me.
So its claim to fame is that it attracted a lot of attention when its artwork came out, because it has got some ridiculously scantily clad women in it. And
gravity physics also played a part, like, because they're scantily clad, but then like the gravity takes place.
There's some bounce happening.
There's a lot of bounce, like individual bouncing.
I didn't actually pay attention to the bounce.
It's all becoming clear.
There's a lot of GIFs of it, so maybe I've just seen it on like repeat.
So you don't want them to bounce individually. You want them to kind of bounce together.
You'd think
asymmetrical bounce.
Yeah, you don't want that. I mean, there's some clubs where you'd pay a lot for that to happen, but that's a skill.
That's
that you don't
a skill,
wanna,
yes.
Neither here nor there. Going to continue.
So, and obviously, in the context of last week, we had a very good, discussion about, sexism and the roles that women are, the things that women are subjected to, especially we were talking about Comic-Con, and Andrew and Andrea had a really good engagement about cosplay. And, in light of all those things, I understand why, when looking at this, some folks could potentially take offense to it. At the same time, it's cartoon art. It's ridiculous. All of the characters are ridiculous, and that doesn't make it any better for someone who's offended by it. So if you are offended by it, my advice would be to steer clear of it. I mean, as with any other form of art and media that you find offensive, you know, then take it as offensive and walk away and don't mess with it. It's not lewd and XXX or anything like that. And it's part of the whole art style. If you ever watched the now old cartoon movie Heavy Metal, it reminds me a ton of that. It's people with like ridiculously characterized, what is there a word for that?
Caricatured
features. So, you know, like the dwarf, his whole body looks like some kind of bizarre, like twisted loaf bread, because he's got muscles on top of muscles on top of muscles on top [S2] Right. [S1] Of muscles, and he's wearing nothing. And like the Amazon chick is depends on what you would like, not particularly sexualized to me, but she's wearing ridiculously nothing, but at the same time is the same sort of thing of like muscles on top of muscles on top of muscles and
a fig leaf and some pasties.
Yeah. That's well, a steel fig leaf and a steel pasty. Right. Right, right. That's that discussion. And if you're offended by it, then I would say leave it alone and just say, you know, it's not for me. The combat and the game is so ridiculously fun. It is single button combat, as you would expect in the Golden Axe sort of style. But, you know, so I started off playing the elf, and the elf is the bow wielding chick, and she kicks with her boots. She is fucking combo awesomeness. So it's like you can do the whole, you know, slide kick into someone, catch them on a rise, jump up, catch them in the air, and it becomes almost, you know, Street Fighter light in that you're comboing guys at the same time. But then the rest of your party is doing all the things they might do. So your sorceress is throwing magic, your heavy is in there swinging their axe, and the on-screen gets completely ridiculous. I mean, completely ridiculous. It is very hard to follow. One of the things people have asked is like, do you want to get this on Vita or on PS3?
Too small.
I would say PS3. So I've been playing on both. I went up to Casual Connect this week, and it has cross save. It does not have cross play, but it has cross save. So you can play on your PS3, upload your save, and then go on your Vita, download the save, play on your Vita, upload your save.
That's how I played Guacamelee, which was awesome.
And it's awesome. Yeah. I loved being able to do that. I love that, like, this week I could keep leveling, I could keep on playing missions, I could keep on advancing the story and do all that stuff. But boy, when I was reduced from my, you know, 47-inch television down to the little screen on the Vita, even though the screen on the Vita is beautiful and it looks fantastic still, It was really, really hard to follow at that time, because it's four players on the screen at the same time, plus enemies.
It's four players no matter what?
No, you don't have to play four. Oh. So you can go in and play solo. A lot of folks have asked if it's a multiplayer title. I'm actually playing it all single player. The multiplayer is great once you get it unlocked.
But it's not like bots are controlling the other three characters if you're not.
You don't have to. So you can go in. So you go into the tavern, and inside, so as you're out adventuring, you'll come across piles of bones, and you can take the piles of bones back to the temple and resurrect them.
That's cool.
And what's cool is it gives you a listing of all of the bones that you found and what character class they are and what level they are.
That's
and
right.
So you can decide, oh, you know, I'm an elf. I don't want any more elves. And so you can bury the bones also. And every so often, by burying the bones, not only does it make the temple happy, of course, but you'll get a little reward. Like, you might get some health potions. Oh, here's a gift for having been good and burying the dead.
Burying the bones makes the temple happy. That sounded weird.
You're rewarded
for graveyard etiquette. I like that.
It's an incredibly simple game, obviously, as these games are, right? But it is, without doubt to me, the best expression of these vanillaware games that they've done. The animation is fantastic. The visuals on it are really great. I think you really want the large screen. It's a little bit weird in that the one thing that's nice on the Vita is that there are some touch mechanics. So, for instance, you have this thief who comes along with you everywhere you go. And the thief is great because he'll like pick up gold around that's laying around, and he goes and unlocks chests and stuff for you. And it's really easy to do on the Vita, because on the Vita, you want him to go unlock a door, unlock a chest, you just tap on it. On your PS3, you use the right stick to move a little virtual cursor over where you want it to go, and then you use the L1 button to tell him to go, as if clicking on it. It's a little unwieldy.
Less intuitive.
Yeah, it's a little unwieldy, but you get really accustomed to it. But most of the time, you're just jumping, running, dodging, you know, hitting people. I've got like the bows, and of course, in any roguelike status, every piece of weaponry that you pick up is new and custom and looks really good. The play sessions are really well thought out and timed. Every one of the levels that you go into typically lasts, you know, it's going to last you like 10 to 15 minutes and has a big boss at the end of it. And so it's really set up well for this sort of play mechanic of pull your party together, mm-hmm. go adventure forth, wreck havoc, beat the big boss, get all the loot, come back and sift through your loot and re-equip, get your new guys together, get your new party together, go back and do it over again. And it's
like fun.
Really, really, really fun.
I bet I would love that game. I mean, I remember how deep I got into Castle Crashers when it hit, just because it brought back the nostalgia of those type of experiences.
This is like elevated. The animation is great. The visuals are really, really cool. Then they also had this really cool thing in Rune Magic. So the backgrounds and, of course, those scenes are all rendered very beautifully, but there'll be runes within them. And the conceit to Rune Magic is that the combination of three rune letters makes magic happen. And the wizard in the town will eventually give you a rune stone. And then when you find two runes in a scene, you can activate the two runes with your rune and something magical happens. So say, for instance, you combine two runes with one of your different rune stones, it creates a phrase that does like a little healing circle. So there's lots of cool layers to it, but at the fundamental core of it, the action in the game is really, really fun.
The unfortunate
drawback is you have to buy the PS3 and the Vita versions separately.
Yeah.
Which makes it
a choosy-choose for me.
That almost doesn't even make sense.
Like, well,
it makes sense from my. It we does make sell sense. You things I, right. Point of view.
Well, it makes sense from a way that. So look, in the case of, you know, any game where they're offering you PS3 and Vita version, like they still have to pay and create those versions. In cases where it's first party, like for Sony, as much as they want to sell Vitas, it makes sense for them to say, okay, you know what, we're going to eat the cost of the Vita version.
I'd love to know what the average cost of that is. Like if you create a PS3 game, especially with all the crossplay stuff going, how easy it is and how expensive it is to do a port like that. Because it almost sounds like they have some sort of system in place now where you're like, okay, we're going to build this game. It's going to be crossplay. So we build these hooks into it as we.
Well, keep in mind, it's not crossplay.
Well, no, not this specific game. I just mean, I was just asking a question about crossplay in general, in that since they're all being developed in tandem now, what is the cost of doing that? Making that extra version. I mean, I would assume the Vita version would be the additional version.
Without crossing a line, I can just say that, I mean, think about a game like All-Stars, where you had a PS3 team making the PS3 game, but there was a whole other dedicated team at a whole other studio, Blue Point in Austin, making the Vita version. Okay, so it's an entire...
So they're running concurrent concurrent development. So that's no joke.
It's not easy. Like, you're still making for another platform. So the same thing with Dragon's Crown. And when you're not Sony, and especially when it's a smaller niche title like this, like as much as you would love to do something like, hey, we'd like give you a discount. Like how do they do it? I mean, that's going to cost you, what is it? 50 and 30. So it's like $80 to buy both of them, which is a lot of money to buy both of them.
Yeah. And you already just paid for a PS3 and a Vita as well.
Yeah, I mean, it is great on PS3. I would wholeheartedly encourage you to get it on PS3. It's fantastic. If you want to play it portable, I won't argue with that. It's fun. It's still good on Vita, but boy, man, it looks so freaking good on big screen. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say that it's too bad that, I mean, I obviously know nothing about the logistics of game programming, but it feels like it would have been smart if, you know, when the Vita was being designed, for them to come up with tools that would make easy PS3 to Vita conversion,
But think about how much difference the hardware is, how much different memory you have.
Yeah.
Memory access.
True.
Processing power. I mean, as much as they want to preach to you that it's a PlayStation in the palm of your hands,
isn't PS4, I mean, didn't they say all games crossplay? All retail, for the next gen? I thought that was an announcement.
There was some kind of like crossplay announcement with the Vita, but I don't remember if it was
that.
All
and I think that's why I was asking about how expensive it is to do that, because it would seem like a really, like if it was a quick, you know, we throw it in the porting machine.
I don't think you can see all PS4 games on Vita.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right.
Or have a crossplay version of them on, or have some sort of crossplay functionality, perhaps. I don't know. I'll retract that.
Maybe the ability to use your Vita as a screen to tunnel into your PS4 and play like Shield would work, you know, like NVIDIA Shield, where you can stream games off your PC.
Or use it as a controller or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't remember that specific thing being said.
I just, because of how much they were touting it, it surprises me that they'd be making such a big push for something if the architecture between the two were completely. I mean, if you did need another dev team to make a port of a game that you're doing for PS4 or PS3, I can't imagine very many developers being like, oh, yeah, let's do, you know, whatever. Let's
make this game twice.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Why not?
But it is essentially what you have to do. You have to make the game twice, and then you have to figure out how to make them work and interoperate with one another. So it's a challenge. Yeah. All right, we still have another segment to go wrap this thing up. We will be right back with more Weekend Confirmed. Toddy deepness there. Propers to Micah for bringing that remix to the fore. Dude, I have to have that after the show, by the way. I have to have that. It's a really, really good track. Great.
You mean have to purchase it?
Yes. Buy it from
me. Yeah. Track Source. Right. It's where I buy almost all the stuff that I pick up is Track Source. So anyway, we were talking about what to talk about during the break, and I guess we're going to dig into this subject. I'll dig into it first so we have ample time so that it doesn't get compressed. This past week, there was definitely among the firestorms that were out there, Mr. Marcus Beer, who has been on the show.
Friend of the show.
Annoyed Gamer. Got into a little bit of a kerfuffle with Phil Fish.
Great way to describe it.
My favorite way of describing it, or the best line that I wish I wrote but someone else did, is beer battered fish.
Yeah.
Beer battered.
I read that a few times.
Pretty clever.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Anyway, so the
jokes.
The crux of this came down to Marcus on his show, The Annoyed Gamer, using some colorful language and being blustery Marcus, but probably going over the line by most people's estimation in calling Phil and John Blow fucking hipster assholes, which is pretty inconsiderate and pretty, you know, mean-spirited, although... I hate to make an although for it. It's Marcus, and he is the Annoyed Gamer, and that's sort of his shtick. Although, if he wants to just be a shtick, that implies he's just being a comedy routine and not a commenter. So there's a lot of other stuff that goes on there. Anyway, that unfortunately led to Phil getting really upset on Twitter and unleashing some pretty mean-spirited stuff at Marcus. I don't have it in front of me. And then the real kicker was that... He culminated in a Futurama quote a lot of people didn't realize was a Futurama quote, where he told Marcus to go kill himself and...
Compare your life to mine.
Compare your life to mine and go kill yourself, right? And
whose line in Futurama was that? Do you remember?
Bender, right?
It might be. It sounds like a Bender line.
I think it's a Bender line.
Yeah.
Wouldn't fit for the other characters. I'm thinking about it.
I wish I could do a Bender voice. I can't.
And unfortunately...
life to mine, Fry, and then kill yourself.
So bad.
The story of Futurama has always been, too few people know about this fucking show, which is amazing. And so the whole problem is, all of you should go watch Futurama. There, I solved it. Yes. If all of you watch Futurama, none of this would happen.
That's the bigger issue here.
And the problem is solved. So the real issue, of course, comes down to, and we can talk about that as much as you want. There was a lot of back and forth. Patrick Klepek wrote a response on Giant Bomb about about no one being owed anything. The question that started Marcus going was that Phil and John Blow responded angrily when asked for comment on the indie game publishing news on self-publishing being okay on Xbox One.
Which was at that point a researched story.
Yep.
However, Microsoft had not released any official information about that yet. At the point at which they were questioned,
right.
Which is kind of important.
And they got pretty indignant about being asked about something before it had been officially announced or whatever. And Marcus was expressing frustration that, you know, these two guys who have become the have become two huge figures in the indie game world, known not just for their games but also for commenting on indie gaming and being real champions of indie games. I mean, I think Jeff, I like the way you describe John Blow. Is he like the professor of indie gaming?
Yeah, yeah. He comes off as a little pretentious sometimes, but there's a lot of good stuff about it.
But forget the pretentious part. It's like both these guys have created a lot of commentary and a lot of emotional energy for indie gaming, right?
Absolutely agree.
Talked about it a lot. And so, you know, to go to them is a pretty natural
expected
thing, and to get, you know, rebuked in a less than, you know, calm and professional manner is a little, the whole thing's kind of bizarre. The whole thing spins in a number of ways that I just don't necessarily understand all of them. If you guys have something to say about it, well, that's
so
great.
The Marcus reaction stemmed from the way that they answered a question.
Right. So he went to them. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm
questioning because that sounds so.
No. They were asked to comment on something that they were like, didn't feel comfortable commenting on. Instead of just saying, hey, no comment, we don't feel comfortable commenting on that, they're like, no. And then they took to Twitter and were basically like, dude, I can't believe these, you know, guys are asking us this bullshit. Like, there's nothing to comment on yet. And it was sort of like a, you're dumb for asking us this question sort of thing. My take on this whole thing is they both were sort of behaving like jagaloons, all right? They're both like just...
There's plenty on both sides.
There's plenty on both sides. That said, in an environment like this where you have somebody who is, I don't know what we call Marcus, we call him a journalist, we call him a enthusiast press, whatever we call him. In any other medium, if you ask somebody, an artist, a question, and they tell you to go fuck yourself, you go, okay, cool, thanks. And then you come back and you ask them the question again when they feel comfortable talking about it or whatever. There's nobody's ever obligated to answer something to you as a member of the press, right? I mean, shit, the White House press secretary would be, I mean, I'm sure he does get called names every day, but it's like, just because you say no comment, and again, this is semantic because they really weren't, Marcus didn't really seem to be upset about the fact that they didn't give him a comment. It was that they sort of, you know, flogged him a bit in public about
how dare you even ask us.
And I don't even know if it was beer specifically that they were, I didn't read all the tweets, but I don't think they called him out specifically in, there was like game trailers asked us this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, why the hell would they answer it? So there's that issue. The other issue that I have is, you know, the personal level of attacks was on both sides
out of line,
totally out of line, what? Totally unprofessional. You know, ironic also because, you know, look, I don't want to put Marcus on blast too hard here, but if you call yourself the annoyed gamer and you're calling other people hipsters,
well,
do you see the irony in that? I mean, that's your whole shtick is about bitching about video games, sure, which are a entitled sort of form of entertainment.
And by the way, if you're the annoyed gamer, when people come back to you with annoyed bullshit, you have to take that in the stride.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. I'm the annoyed gamer too.
In his comments, he said, you know, they're assholes. Granted, I'm an asshole too, but people expect it.
But what
me,
I do,
so not
my behavior excuses
not acceptable.
Well, and then he made an argument about the whole tit for tat about, hey, well, if you don't talk to us about your games, we're not going to come to ask you about your games. And it's this whole symbiotic relationship. Fucking bullshit on that, because if you're an artist and you create something and it's newsworthy and it's worth reporting on, people are going to ask you about it.
That's the media's job.
That's the media's job, right? It's not this whole like, hey, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. It's like, if you make something interesting or worth talking about, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on a second, because I really want to, that's the issue I most want to respond to, because I don't completely agree with Klepek on this matter. It's not a symbiotic relationship, and it's not a I'll scratch your back, you scratch my back. It is a professional relationship. It is an ongoing relationship, and each one of them is different and unique. So look, I understand. You want to be a game developer? You never necessarily signed on to be a public persona. Being a game developer doesn't mean that you want to be the winner of X Factor. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily want to be that person. And there are plenty of games that are high-profile games that are designed by great designers who are not front and center in the public sphere.
Right.
Tomb Raider. Who designed the new Tomb Raider?
Lara Croft.
Who's the designer for that? Quick, no. Big game, huge marketing. Who's the designer? Who was... We don't know.
Frederick?
Because Frederick, that's not Water? Where that's not where they went. And you know what? It is difficult for an indie because they don't have a team of people to go to. So they need people to be out there in front of their game. And so to a degree, it's inescapable that, you know, that Phil and John and et al. Have to go and be out there in front of the camera and talking about their game when they're showing it to people. But they don't also have to be out there also talking about indie gaming all the time and promoting the craft. And being, if they don't want to be that person who promotes the craft, and if they're going to be that person who promotes the craft, then they are assuming that responsibility. And it does come with a two-way street. It does come with a thing of, hey, if you want to be this person who talks about this subject matter in a position of authority and represents it, then represent it all the time. You can't just pick and choose.
I think you can pick and choose, but from my perspective. Because that's your prerogative.
You have the prerogative to not answer, but you don't have the prerogative to be indignant about being asked. Well, see, because you set yourself up to be a pundit.
Now you, I think we're talking about two different things. And the second thing is the thing that I'm much more interested in talking about. And I think it's this larger thing that can be abstracted from the individuals involved. Because I happen to really like Marcus a lot, even though I disagree with his. The way he goes about things.
I think his persona is silly, but
well, whatever.
It's his thing. He's got his thing.
I think you can abstract it from the individuals involved and realize that at every step of the way, every single person involved in this kerfuffle seems to be completely incapable of communicating on a human level.
It's a good point.
And I think that is the case, unfortunately, with the internet. Phil Fish didn't quit Fez 2 because of Marcus Beer. He quit Fez 2 because he made public a bunch of remarks that were wildly inappropriate, and then the public at large engaged him on that in a way that fit the tone with which he started the engagement, or that Marcus started the engagement, or that every fucking person involved in this story seemed to be dealing with, and that is a completely inhuman level of communication. And at a certain point, the fucking internet needs to grow up. We need to grow the hell up and learn to talk to each other like human beings. Well, when are we going to figure out that what you put out into the world has consequences and there are people that you are talking to? I wish we could just raise the level of discourse, and I'm going to endeavor for the rest of my days to push for that, because it's absolutely it is the lowest common denominator right now. It is people using blunt instruments to try to do surgery, and it's completely stupid.
And the funny thing about this whole situation is, had it been handled that way, like with maturity, with a level of professionalism,
not over Twitter,
without sensationalism, it would have been a non-story. Nobody would be talking about it.
I agree. I think that the majority of the discourse that happens online, unfortunately, is done so by people that seem to not know how to communicate.
Because right. there just is, I mean, a bunch of articles came out after this happened. Like, the reason he canceled Fez 2 is because he just couldn't handle being in the gaming industry anymore because of the amount of hate he got all the time. Like, not just because of this. Like, I'm sure it escalated because of this. But he got, like, death threats and, like, but there's violent things said to him. And it's...
There's a fantastic article on
Penny Arcade. Penny Arcade did a great one. Yeah.
Any of us in this room, and I'm sure... And we're just a small portion of that. But any... As they say in the Penny Arcade article, any person that puts creativity out into the world has dealt with this, has dealt with just overwhelming waves of personal invective.
Right.
And
that's the problem.
Trust me, I have received more than ample
as
shares
have we
of
all.
This.
So yeah. say we
I
all.
I promise you that I, you know, for the game developers that think we can't relate, I promise you that a decade ago, when I was really getting going in this business and was so enthusiastic and excited, that the last thing that I thought I would be doing was spending every week reading comments about how awful I am, how terrible I am,
right.
how much people hate me, how I'm a fucking nightmare and a terrible person.
Right. And to all the people, and I know,
and all
this
isn't personal
vitriol. This doesn't need to become about us, but it is, in the sense that none of this is unique to us. None of this is unique to any single entity
person, company that puts anything out into the world, that is just the accepted level of discourse. No one seems to know how to make a criticism or and I'm being broad, of course, I'm being overly generalizing, but there is such a level of this. And one of the best quotes I read, I think actually was from Jonathan Blow, when someone said, you know, why don't you just ignore it? And he says, you cannot. And I've had many people tell me, oh, just get a thicker skin, Jeff. Come on, just get, you know, just don't engage the haters. And it doesn't work that way.
Once you know what those words mean. You know what they're implying. You know that they're just trying to make you mad or something, but it still registers.
And you get to a point, blocking people on Twitter becomes a full-time job, or like
in the frame of reference that I have been fortunate enough to be getting some really good therapy over the last year. I can tell you that my personal self-worth and feeling of, you know, being able to love myself and accept like what I'm doing and feel good about it has changed the way that I hear those things. I've been able to separate them out some, and it's a really big thing.
I think that's great, but I want to
throw something else out there, because this came up on Facebook, and this is another spreading trend, like pointing the finger into the media and saying you guys are the bad guy. Like, we're subject to it as well. Ken Levine on Facebook posted this. In terms of gamer rage, I'm not sure if journalists have a sense of their role in this. Many brilliant yet myopic writers out there. And why are you nodding your head?
Because I fucking agree with that.
How on earth can you agree with that?
Because,
why?
Because there are people who, when people assess art, and we're, I think, as far as an entertainment medium and an artistic medium, you know, gaming is very, very young, and as is the audience and the critical base. And I think that people, it's one thing to be critical of work. It's another thing to be so, like, there's a segment of it's hip to be negative. It's hip to bitch about stuff. I mean, it is.
Where is there? Yeah. What do you mean? There's a segment of it's hip to be negative.
Well, look at. I mean, Marcus has a whole show based on
that's Marcus's show.
I know, but there's
as
that's
a generalization.
But he said there
so
were
as
people.
A generalization, are you saying that games media is more intent on ripping apart games and being negative than just like there's no value to a review on Polygon?
Oh no!
I think Kim Levine was saying that there were some individuals.
That's yeah. I wasn't making a blanket statement about all journalists are, you know, all game journalists or game press are, you know, being overly negative or critical.
Many brilliant yet myopic. Many. So many of you guys out there practicing this craft that you think you're good at, I don't like the fact that you've been detracting of my craft, so I'm going to turn around and tell you that you're shit at your craft too.
Well,
that's a negative interpretation.
I think you're taking that off.
Wait,
personally.
Hold on. That's not a negative or positive interpretation. That is exactly what it is. It is, you guys don't know what you're doing. You're myopic.
Well, he said brilliant.
Oh, let me get a shit sandwich. Well, hold on, let me give you a shit Oreo.
Well, okay, well, calm down for a second, because I think brilliant but myopic is a fairly even-handed way to express what I think he's trying to get at, which is if you're extremely intelligent and yet short-sighted, it's not saying that you're shit at your job. It's saying that perhaps, I mean, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here and saying that I think that's a pretty elegant way of saying, hey, try to take the long view on some
of
this stuff.
It's a sentiment that I've heard quite a bit of, developers being dissatisfied and unhappy with members of the game media being how they perceive overly critical of their work.
If
someone has an opinion about a work, that is their opinion about the work, but it doesn't mean that they're right or that they're wrong. Does the person who loves BioShock Infinite and gives it a 10 out of 10, are they myopic and are they unable to see the future because they're rating it too high?
You're putting that on it. You're putting the whether they like his work or not like his work. I'm saying that I think this speaks to what I'm trying to bring up, which is people's inability, it seems, and I think he's speaking to this too, and John Carmack spoke about it at QuakeCon as well. People's inability, it seems, to form an opinion and express that opinion in ways that are
constructive.
Just respectful. Just
are you
human?
Okay, so are you seeing those things that you're discussing? Are you seeing those in the printed media games material. Are you seeing printed. That? Are you seeing something on Polygon that makes you feel like that person is over the line? Are you seeing something on GameSpot that makes you think that person's over the line?
Well, let me ask you this.
Or are you seeing it in the comments?
Well, it's in the comments, but let me just say this. Because you specified printed media, and then you named two non-printed sources. And I'm saying, what is the difference? But is there
text on a page?
Okay, but is there a demonstrable difference between Polygon and Joe Q blog? Bill's blog of personal hate and attack? And
that's a great site, by the way.
And is it is yeah. Bill's blog of writing. Personal hate and attack really part of games media?
Yes.
Well,
why not?
I think that there's...
If it can get a headline on an aggregator site, or... And these... I think his point is overly critical isn't the problem. It's negative for the point of making an interesting read and causing comments...
And that's the world of Angry Joe Show. And
sure, but isn't that the problem? Like, just people who are trying to be... Is that really journalism if you're going for
no,
an angle?
No, it's not journalism. And why are you looping everybody into the same pot and just saying, well, you know what? Many, many of you are brilliant, but you're not seeing the big picture. Is the big picture just that we say, oh, this game's so great because it was worked on so hard. Oh, my gosh, it's amazing.
I think you're going down the wrong road here.
Really? Because I want to tell you, like, one of the commenters on Ken's post, his very first comment was, journalists often think of themselves as impartial observers, but in truth, they're like the Joker setting fire to a pile of money just to watch it burn.
Facebook.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's obviously an extreme, and I'm sure you can find cases of that. I don't think the point that he's
We're making, not out to get anybody. I've never once, I don't know a single person. And I know a lot of folks in games media. I don't know a single person who didn't come into the business because they love games more than anything in the world. And all they ever wanted to do was learn more about them, understand them, and talk about them with their friends. And not a single one of them ever had a thought, oh, you know what I'm going to do? It'll be really cool. I'm going to make this guy who made this, a gal who made this game, look really stupid because I know better than them. There's not a single one of them out there like that. So why paint us in that picture?
But you can't tell me that, you know, this instance, I'm sorry, just real quick, the instance that between Marcus and Phil was caused by...
I've moved on from that. No, we're not talking about that.
All right.
I think that, and I know I
wasn't coming, related to that at all.
I back to the same point. I think you're taking a lot of personal offense to the idea of games journalism, and
I don't call it journalism, number one. I call it enthusiast media, and I think that trying to hold any of us responsible and accountable for the then crazy vitriol that certain fringe members of the audience engage in is silly, and they engage
but
in
it's
it.
It's no different
they
than
engage
anything.
In it against us. But the same people who are sitting there saying Bioshock Infinite is shit and terrible are the same people who are sitting there saying, Garnet Lee, you're an asshole and I fucking hate you and I hope you die.
And you know what?
Responsible for them any more than Ken's responsible for them.
I guarantee you're going to get the comment that no one said that sentence to you. That's how you took it, which is an important distinction. But I will also say this. My point is that it is no different than the level of discourse in this country about politics, about religion, anything. And unfortunately, you know, what's that quote? You know, it used to be that if you wanted to get into a fight with someone, express an opinion about politics. Now, if you want to get into a fight with someone, express an opinion about a movie.
Express an opinion.
Right. Well, but I think it's all tied together. There is a tone, and I hate to be talking about more than just games on a games podcast, but there is a tone that has been set, I want to say nationally, but globally, of just how we interact with one another as human beings, whether talking about video games we love, movies we love, who we're going to vote for, what we believe in. It doesn't matter. We've lost the ability to talk to one another without hate and vitriol. And it sucks. And at a certain point, somebody's going to have to stand up and say, I don't want to do that anymore. Let's not do that. How can we fucking rise above that? Are we just going to keep descending into this disgusting cesspool of mudslinging? Because it sucks. And it's right and left wing talk radio. And it's all this, it's fucking sports talk. You and I love sports. The level of hate and vitriol directed at
ridiculous.
Sports, it's everything.
It's ridiculous.
And all these things keep coming up. And you know what?
When I read Phil Fish's tweet, I said two things. A, that's a pretty, unfortunately, pretty immature way to deal with that. Mm. And B, I have felt exactly that way.
Yeah.
I have many times thought, why am I doing this? I just want to quit. I just want to quit and say you win.
You have no idea how many times I've wanted to just quit doing this show.
I think any creative person, and you know, I listen to Tina Fey's book, there's always a chapter in all these people's books about dealing with Twitter
But here's the thing.
All that shit.
These are all edge cases. So what happens is most of the folks, like, look, we have tens of thousands of people listening to the show because they like the show. And then happens is some of them.
And I just had a birthday and I got the most amazing comments and I just met a whole bunch of amazing people that came out and I got supported on Kickstarter. All these things are great. And it sucks to sound like you're complaining.
So how do we squelch really ugly negative part that comes out? How do we squelch that?
I
don't know.
You have to start standing up, I think, and saying
on an individual level.
Like I remember the day on TRS when, you know, years ago when Alex and Dan and I had the conversation about like, let's never make a criticism that's personal. Like, it doesn't have to be about that actor is terrible. You know, it like that performance can be bad. Right.
This wasn't a good portrayal.
It doesn't have to be about those kinds of things. It can be about the work. It can be expressing your personal feelings and your enthusiasms and your disappointments about things. And I'm sure that a lot of our audience is like, stop whining, you little babies. But
well, I'm trying not to whine.
Stop whining. I think it's, what are you suggesting? Someone stands up and like waves a flag. Like, I don't.
No, I think every, you know, I think
there needs to be report. I think the report button on Twitter needs to be more serious. Like, do you guys follow Feminist Frequency? Like, sometimes she retweets the rape threats she gets that Twitter won't ban these users. And they send her the most violent rape threats. And there's nothing she can do. I just feel like when it comes to these kind of violent comments, I think that, I mean, I know censorship is not the answer to anything ever, because censorship, you know, is, we have First Amendment rights that don't apply to private companies, but still, I think there's got to be some kind of report button. There's got to be some way that's bigger than block, because until we can change the entire population of the world, there's got to be a way we can block those people. It's just not fair to everyone else.
I apologize, because I did actually take one level of bringing it up, which was that I went from the level of, you know, the small story to the story about games media. And I think that, you know, it's something I've heard from more than one developer about how they're starting to feel like the games media is out to get them. And I think that I understand that, because when they read a story, then they go to the comments and they see how vitriolic those comments can get. But that sentiment being expressed in the comments is not the result of the members of the media. I just like to say, like, myself and, like I said, everybody that I've ever met. I was spent, you know, some time with Adam this week. I was up in San Francisco. We hung out and we were talking about games and how much we love it and how much we'd like to, you know, get together and do something, because we love games and we love having been in the business and like seen so many games and having this background from which to draw and talk about games. And that's all we ever wanted to do.
And on that note, clearly Ken is not talking about you guys. I mean, in that respect, he's saying many, and that's, and
I know,
fall into that pool.
And so I'm just, I guess my caution would be, like, when you're speaking in public like that, then if you want to, then fine. You know what? Don't be shy. Call some people out. Say, you know what? Yeah. This guy doing Angry Joe show, it's fucking ridiculous. Right. If you don't like it. I mean, there's people who like it and maybe it's funny in one regard, but maybe it's maybe it's bad to have such a poison pen in the space.
Well, it reminds me, there was a Kotaku article about like questioning whether or not Blood Dragon was homophobic, and like that's the kind of article that I think does damage. Do you guys remember?
I remember that. So I mean, my counter question would be, and I did not read the story, so I'm a bit ignorant coming to this, should we not? I think that it probably was link bait. I mean, it probably was a traffic bait, probably was a traffic play, but should we not ask questions like that?
We should absolutely have those conversations.
Yeah, but to your point, there needs to be that line where you have a filter where you go, you know what, is this a legitimate question that is interesting and worth exploring, or is this linked?
Let's talk about the issue of homosexuality in gaming versus, are they homophobic? Because you're already phrasing the whole article in a negative light.
I agree. You're right.
But that, I mean, that's just one example.
Wow, that would shoot up a segment.
Yeah.
I mean, but let's all be nice to you. Like, can we just take away that, like, don't leave each other shitty comments? Like, what are you doing?
I just think of, make the world a
those
better
people.
Place.
To those quote, are people to quote, you're hurting.
To quote Bill and Ted, be excellent to each other.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so simple.
That's all.
Yeah.
Don't be awful.
Make the world a better place. Think about what you put into it. I think we are all so new at having the bully pulpit, to having that bullhorn. Every single person now has that, and we're all so new to it.
Well, and I'd venture to say that most of the people that blast like that put really negative shit out there. They get down, they sit down, they read something that they don't like, or read a headline, or hear a comment. They put that on blast, and then they go about their day, and they don't even think twice about it.
Yeah,
and they don't realize
probably not.
They don't realize that that's a little dagger waiting in somebody's Twitter feed or somebody's comment board that's gonna get somebody whether or not their skin is thick. And I think the impulse to put that negativity out there in knee jerk reactionary way is.
Well, you know what the good news is? The good news is, on the whole, the listeners of this show have been awesome.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And been really great awesome in listeners. Comments. And your participation on Shaq News in the last few months has been fantastic. So keep it up. That right there is what keeps me coming back each week to do the show.
It's what makes me rush from the airport to be here.
It was really sweet.
And what makes me all tingly inside.
All right. Finishing moves?
Yeah.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
All right, because I'm going to give us an uplift that I actually wanted to talk about this as a segment, but maybe we can save it for next week or something. Can we freaking get excited for August? Because it is game time again. If you thought the drought was getting to you, it is game time.
But I have so many games I need to get to.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
Damn it.
I'm sorry, Jeff. You're just going to have to be happy because there's a lot of great games coming. So you've got Tales of Zillia. We've got Pikmin 3. We've got Dragon's Crown. We've got Payday 2. We've got Saints Row 4. You've got XCOM The Bureau. Splinter Cell Blacklist. Remember when Blacklist was a big deal?
It was at PAX.
Right? Lost Planet 3
what
at the end of the month
which looks really good.
They need to up the marketing for that.
Well, I think that the thing is, it's extended out so long that they've kind of like you know, that's hard once you're trying to extend your marketing plan.
Although getting away from Dead Space 3 is probably a good idea.
Yeah, Killer is Dead, which, you know, we can have back and forth on that one.
Suda
and Madden. August. Mm. That's just August. And then September gets here.
And then
folks, excite.
Yeah. Demands $500 of your life.
Excite. Yeah. I am freaking stoked about that. And we didn't talk about it. And I know you guys wanted me to talk. The 770 GTX that I got for my computer is awesome.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
That is a really, really great little upgrade. Because I went from a 580 to a 770 because my 580 thermal failed. And I didn't think it was going to be as big a difference as it is. It was really nice.
Well,
really.
Welcome back to your PC being your primary rig.
It still was, but
It'll really be now.
Yeah, now you'll be chagrined when things aren't released on PC. You're like, like GTA, for example.
Or you'll be like, oh, well, I guess I can play the PS3 version.
Anyway, so there you go. Be excited for August. It's going to be an awesome, awesome month. And then just the herald of things to come. Mm. Who would like to go next?
I'll go.
Okay.
I'm very happy to be back. Thank you all for letting me jump in mid-show.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I want to thank everybody that came out to the PAX panel in Australia. There were a lot of weekend confirmers. I had a meetup. We did a meetup at a bar. There were some really passionate, awesome fans, and several of our diehard, loyal, awesome commenters were there. Got names you would recognize. Bailey, Shadow 13, a lot of really cool dudes. Meeting them face to face was awesome. I have nothing but gratitude for that crew, and I had an absolutely wonderful time in Australia. I would recommend visiting to anybody that's ever heard of that country and never been. It was really, even in the winter, it was fantastic. And I'm super grateful. And just a little quick update on newest, latest, best. We shot a full episode there. The show is coming very soon. There was a little teaser preview shown at the panel, and it is moving along quite nicely and should be in front of your eyeballs very soon.
Sweet. Congrats.
So thanks, everybody, for your support.
Awesome.
Cool.
Nicole?
Yes. Okay, so before I do a finishing move, I just want to, on the last topic, I really do appreciate all the positive comments. I don't want to, harp on how much we hate the negative, because
totally
the positive is
and
it's amazing. And
constructive criticism can be positive.
Fantastic.
It doesn't, It doesn't have to be like you're great all the time. It can be a.
Oh, you thought that? I thought this. Exactly. And then I love to engage in that kind of thing.
I normally like you, but today you were kind of a dick. I'm just kidding. I always try to listen to that.
That's better than some of the things.
Yeah, I get that. I know.
I get that. It's like, were they trying to compliment me?
Yeah.
That didn't work.
The back of their hand.
But my finishing move is I wanted to encourage everyone to pay attention to The Odd Gentleman. There are developers. They make some great games. Are you talking about me again?
Winterbottom.
You are an odd gentleman. But no, this company, you should definitely find them on Twitter and stuff to keep up with their updates. They did The Adventures of PB Winterbottom. And they just announced last week that they are making a game with Neil Gaiman.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, Wayward Manor. And we're just now kind of getting news about it, but it sounds absolutely awesome. And if you don't know Neil Gaiman, A, you suck. B, Sandman. So just keep an eye out on them because some good things coming.
Unfortunately, Neil Gaiman isn't writing it. He is doing the music.
So we'll see.
He's choreographing some of the dance numbers.
And Steven Spielberg will be doing all the voice acting. All right. So I guess it's your turn.
Yes, okay. Sir, Mr. Mattis, it is you.
Okay, cool. Two quick app, not app shout outs. One's a game, Alpha, one's an app. I've been playing a bit of a game called Mousecraft, which is on Steam Greenlight, and there's a website, and I think the alpha demo is publicly available. Anyway, they're seeking feedback. It is a combination of Lemmings meets Tetris. So you've got mice.
Oh, you just broke my brain.
Yeah. So you're trying to get mice from their starting point, their wheel, to the cheese at the end of each level. And you do that by arranging different Tetris shaped blocks into the environment.
Is it like Mouse Trap? Not the board game, but remember that game that used to be like on old Windows with the cats?
This is more about climbing around to get all the little nuggets and crystals and get to the cheese at the end. Sure. It's really cool visually, in the background. It's like a lab setup. So you see the mice in front, and then there's this like crazy, like Snagglepuss looking cat in the back, like with the doctor's suit on and stuff. And he's like watching the experiment as it's going on and everything. Based on the interface and the gameplay and stuff, it seems highly likely that it'll end up on a mobile device at some point. But the PC version that I was playing is very cool. It gets a lot more complicated than it sounds. They start adding different bricks and different materials. So there's like jello bricks that'll, prevent your mice from hurting themselves if they fall too far, or, explosive bricks or bricks that crumble after a mouse walks across. Anyway, it's really neat. Crunch and Koalas is the developer. You might want to give that a look. The other thing is a non-game related app, but still very cool. I'll be really quick about it. It is called Bycott. And it is on Android and iOS. It's free. It's a one-man development team, and he's still iterating on it. But basically what it is you can go into a store, scan the UPC code of any product, and based on the filters that you've set in the app, it'll tell you if it's the company that sells it is a GMO or non-GMO company, whether or not the company supports equal rights for marriage. Wow. So basically—
Where does he get his info?
I'm sure it's, I don't know exactly. It seems pretty accurate so far.
The internet.
It's pretty easy to find out
Wikipedia.
On your own if somebody is owned by Monsanto if somebody is, so it's, and there's, like I said, there's only a number of filters in there right now, but if you want to add a little political element to your shopping and vote with your dollars, it's pretty cool.
Great idea.
I like that.
I just had to turn on Twitter before I closed out here. It's already begun. Silent Dante. Now we just need at Garnet Lee to propose to Ariel Lotti, and the new weekend confirmed will be Nia. Thanks. Thanks, well,
I didn't say it.
All right. Thanks, Nicole. Great to have you on, as always.
Thanks for having me.
Again, guys and gals out there, if you would like us to do a new story time, we'll be taking requests here.
Oh, I haven't watched the video yet.
Oh, it's awesome. It's
pretty magical.
So good.
It's kind of like your birthday present from Nick.
I can't wait to see. Australia needs to figure out their internet. Seriously.
Their internet?
Their
How
internet.
About just the
internet?
Does
internet go backwards?
It does go backwards. It swirls down.
And Jeff, of course, great to have you here.
Dude, always awesome to be here.
Hope to see your byline on some upcoming stories around the world of the web.
Me too.
You guys know how to get a hold of him, or if you don't, you know how to get a hold of me. So
you notice that Jeff lost the beard and I grew one.
Yeah, you're looking.
We share a beard. That's why.
Yeah, we share a beard. I have it for the week. Yeah. I'll give it back
Joint
to you.
Joint custody. It's
clearly,
cute.
Yeah.
Jeff, good to have you back, buddy.
Thank you.
We missed
good
you.
To be back.
And wonderful to be here at the New Digs at the Atlantis Group. Yeah. Fantastic new studio location. Thank you to Micah and the whole team here, and Mr. Del Rio for having us ready to rock and roll this morning.
Don't worry, guys. It'll smell like farts soon enough.
Hey. We got to figure out fantasy football because
yeah,
people
it's
asking
soon.
About it. So we have to figure that out as well.
Oh, man, I can't wait.
So, all right, everybody. That's your Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.